important that you sound nonchalant in the extreme.
Oh, hey, welcome to Footprints in the Sandler. That's my most nonchalant.
I don't even care that I'm doing this.
Yeah, what even is this? Pointless. Welcome to Footprints in the Sandler. My name is Michael. This is a podcast where we rank and review Adam Sandler movies. All of them. One after another. And not in chronological order, which is our main thing that sets us apart from other better produced podcasts.
Your lack of structure.
You fuck those guys. Normally, the other host, Lachlan McLeod, is the other host.
Now, that name suggests a very Scottish man, I assume.
He's Australian as fuck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, he does have the same, his middle name is Connor, which Connor McLeod, like the very Scottish Highlander guy.
Well, I understood there could be only one of those. It seems he's another one.
Yeah, they're actually Sith. No, never mind.
They're actually what?
Sith.
Sith?
Yeah, there's two of them.
Oh, I see. The pupil and the master.
Yes, but which one is he? Never mind.
Okay.
And so instead of Lockie, because he's away in Australia, still, we've got Tom Foster.
Hello.
Great guy.
Oh. And what an honorific.
Welcome, extra host, guest host.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm prepared to be reviled by regular listeners as there's only a pretender to the throne.
There's a handful, and our mutual friend Ewan is one of those.
Yes, correct.
So reviled, you will most certainly maybe not be.
Okay.
Silly.
Yes. That set the tone very well. We're in for a fun day.
Yeah.
And this podcast is going to last an entire day, as I understand it.
Yeah. It does. We can't stop recording, but we can take breaks.
So we can look forward to those.
Yeah, because we'll have to have dinner at some point and have a bath.
Together.
Go to sleep. Yeah, but this will keep running. This is the other thing that sets us apart. Fuck that guy, Lachlan. He's still in Australia. He's avoiding the fire,
yeah.
I think. We don't need to get into that stuff.
No, it's probably
it'll date us.
Well, for starters, but also like possibly a little insensitive to the people who are actually dealing with the horrible, horrible effects of all that fire.
Yes. Yes. I'm sure Lachlan is dealing with it in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't count as not talking about that stuff. So instead, I'll just say, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad that you were able to join in and that you were willing to watch a movie. And what movie was it we watched?
It was the movie Anger Management.
Yes, not the TV show Anger Management.
No, which I
only heard about.
Understand exists.
Yeah, same. Ewan mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah.
That there's like four seasons or something.
Uh-huh. Difficult to see where they could take it after.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's... Is there four seasons or was there just like a
just
really
lots.
Big season ordered or something?
Well, maybe, yeah. I think
we should have looked into this.
Well, no.
No, okay.
Yeah. Yes, as always.
Well, maybe during one of those breaks where we don't pause the podcast, we can look it up.
Yeah, but the only other time that I ever heard of that show, as far as I can remember, was when I was... Well, should I even mention? Well, when I was torrenting this movie, the other anger management things that came up.
I had no idea. I assumed you had purchased a legitimate copy.
I did in the end because I couldn't download it. Smart.
Nice.
But yeah, when I was looking at the Pirate Bay or whatever, should I name? I don't know if I'll bleep out.
What is Pirate Bay?
Yeah, exactly. There was anger management seasons. I can't remember what there was. I'm pretty sure I saw season 3. So I don't know. But we didn't Google it. I guess I'll Google it now just to have a little check. I mean, we can come back to it because, yeah.
I mean, where do you go from,
like, well, let's
there is no Citizen Kane TV series.
Yeah.
and no TV series for, you know, The Godfather or 12 Angry Men. None of these well, there was a TV series of The Godfather, but it was just the first two movies cut up into chunks.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was like 10 hours long.
Ugh. For just to make it easier, bite size.
I don't know what the purpose was, but they got all the... got like Pacino and Diane Keaton and everybody like to do additional scenes for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah, no, it's a real thing.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's odd, and none of the DVD releases seem to...
Yeah, they
have like a few bits from it, and you kind of think, well... Of all the things you could put on, like, a Blu-ray release of The Godfather, maybe all that extra stuff with all those incredibly famous actors that you shot, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, might be a decent extra on there.
Yeah, it could be worth a little view.
Yeah, I think there might be some people who would be interested.
Yeah, even I'd say 50% of the people in this room would be 50% keen to see that, some of that, 50% of that.
Okay, I'd be interested to see it. Am I the person?
100% of the people in this room would be interested to see 50% of the extra stuff.
Yeah, but I want to choose the 50%.
Yeah. Nonsense talk. That is actually really interesting. I never knew about that.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know if it's wacky. Available anywhere. Maybe this Pirate Bay you spoke of will have it.
Well, they didn't have Anger Management 2003... So I had to buy that from DVD.com.
From DVD.com?
Yeah.
Now, I've heard of that one because I buy all my DVDs legitimately, and that's where I get them.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, there is a series. It's got Charlie Sheen in it.
Yes.
And
playing
the anger guy.
Well,
let's
talk, narrow it down, because everybody in these films, or this film, is pretty angry, except for Marissa Tomei, who remains like just a sort of pliable kind of weird mannequin
that's
just whatever the story needs her to
be. She bounces around.
Although, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, but even we can talk about what the actual... Let's talk about the movie.
Yes, okay. Yeah,
because then we can...
For a sec.
Just 1 second of talk about the movie. And then we can talk about how the series... shouldn't have happened because there's nowhere to go. Is there?
Well, that's the thing. We are in no position to comment on that, never having seen it. It could be even better than the film Anger Management.
Yeah. Yes, could be. So this movie came out in 2003. It's the one that has a poster of
America was going through a tough time.
That
I
is
believe.
True, yes. And it's important that the people in the movie... say that to each other sometimes.
Yeah, there has to be a joke on a plane about America going through a tough time.
Yes. Yeah, weird movie. And also his loft apartment.
Mm.
The balcony has like a billboard that's like a army recruitment type billboard.
Yes, no, I saw that, but I assumed, weirdly, it makes more sense that it's actually a kind of America's great support the troops thing.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, what I assumed was this was just another of the things in Adam Sandler's character's life that makes him feel small and is like an intimidation tactic. So actually, I thought that it was kind of a triumphalist, military sort of oppressive thing.
Oh, crazy.
But right. It probably is just a little bit of kind of, well, just because we made a joke, a sort of oblique joke about possibly the 9/11 attacks, whatever, we're in no way trivializing our nation's great efforts in the Middle East.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because I couldn't really tell. Like, it didn't, the billboard was featured, but it
very prominently.
Yeah, but it wasn't always clear what it said. And I can't even remember what it said. What did it say?
It was something about a nation of heroes and there is one or...
Just some generic thing.
I can't even remember the name of Adam Sandler's character, and I just watched the movie.
Dolbin. Yeah, Grandobe. Yeah, but the billboard has a picture of a marine guy. A not a mariner. I mean a...
No.
What do you call that? I told you.
Not a frog man.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. And it just looked, when I first saw it, I thought it was CGI, but then it cut to a close-up where it was clearly there and it was real.
Oh, yeah, because like, it's weird. Sitting on top of the building.
Yeah.
And
just...
We should probably sort of...
Go back. Not,
yeah, probably go back and start from... I mean, we don't have to go through the film beat for beat, but like, what is this film about,
yeah.
Michael?
So yeah, as I was saying, it's the one that has the poster of Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler facing each other and yelling.
Screaming.
And it's called Anger Management. Mm-hmm. And obviously because Adam Sandler has that kind of trope that he plays where he's angry, mm-hmm. like yells.
Yes.
Like his Happy Gilmore thing.
Yes.
When it came out, I was just like, eh, they're just leaning into the, you want to see him be angry?
what did you think that this film was before you saw it?
Yeah, so I had no idea. I just thought, I imagined that it was just a movie where, like, two strangers bump into each other and they don't get along, but they just keep getting, like...
More angry.
More angry and put back into
the
scenarios
film is
together.
One just crescendo of screams.
Yeah, exactly.
All the way through.
I genuinely thought, and maybe I'd seen a trailer where the trailer features lots of them like face to face yelling.
Yes.
Which doesn't really happen.
No, that's not a shot in the movie.
Yeah. So I just figured it's literally just a vehicle for Adam to just like yell a lot. Mm-hmm. But then when we start watching it, it's actually much, much stranger than that.
It is. And it comes at an interesting time in the kind of Adam Sandler, Happy Madison canon.
Yeah.
Because it's not those kind of formative films that everybody thinks as being the sort of solid foundation of Happy Madison that then just went off into becoming this weird money train thing.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But it's close as
Which
well,
because
it's
Happy
only...
Happy Gilmore's and such.
Yeah.
But it's not the, like... Or at least I the reason I wanted to kind of do this one was because I didn't know... Like, seemed to sit in a kind of weird hinterland where...
Yes.
Adam Sandler is still a kind of legitimate... Not necessarily A-list, but B-list
totally.
Star.
Yeah.
And a vehicle for a movie.
Yeah.
Or the movies are vehicles for him.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know if this was necessarily a Happy Madison production or whether he was just in it.
Totally, yeah,
because it's not sort of... all the marketing for, like, I feel like pretty much every Happy Madison production after this looks the same.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it's
I know
all
what
like
you mean.
White
yeah.
background posters with big chunky colourful letters and
true.
A bunch of ex-SNL people.
Yeah.
All paying each other money.
yeah.
But this is kind of, this was like, oh, this is more in the vein of Analyze This or something.
Yeah.
It's just a kind of high concept.
Totally.
Comedy.
Yeah, maybe
a bit of a screwball comedy, but with a kind of solid underpinning of screenplay under. This is the film I assumed it might be.
Totally. Yeah.
And it starts out like... There's a point very early on where I thought that might be the direction we were going in, but it lasts, it doesn't last.
No, totally. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I feel like that, like, yeah, I mean, when it came out, I didn't want to see it, and I never tried to watch it, so it was never a thing that I was, like, curious about it, but having started this podcast and been watching the movies, there's a couple from that time where it's like just before the company, I guess, like got really big and started making just machine movies, just churning them out. But it's also kind of like just after a kind of peak. Like I think Big Daddy is like one of the biggest ones and is a Happy Madison like foundational movie and also is like a pretty much legit movie that you can watch and it's quite funny as well.
Kind of like that as well. It's
yeah, that's a lot earlier though. Well, I mean it's like 4 years earlier, so like
Big Daddy is sort of around about the same time as this.
So Big Daddy was like 99 and this is like the Anger Management is like 2003 and I think like Big Daddy and Little Nicky are sort of the a kind of an apinnacle of like
The Waterboy would probably be around
The Waterboy,
then as
yeah,
well.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Those movies were like big.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like in the time since then, there's lots of fucking Adam Sandler movies that have come out that I guess they make lots of money, but they're not like
They maybe made all that money before they were in the cinema, though. Like before they even made it to the box office, the money was already made from other companies subsidizing the movie to get their products in it.
Yeah, true. But yeah, this it definitely looked like a curio, and it would be good if there were. I think it's almost disappointing, like when you are like, "Oh, I wonder if there's any non sequitur Adam Sandler movies." There's a couple.
Well, yeah, I think Punch Drunk Love has seemed to be the outlier, isn't
it? Yeah, and that's like the one, but yeah.
And I think maybe I've seen Funny that. People, which I haven't seen, but it's supposed to be a kind of, you know, he plays a kind of commentary on himself.
Yeah, it is,
but then just carries on doing the same types of things that he does.
Yeah.
Like it makes the same movies after that. It's like when Les Dennis was in Extras playing a sort of self, a really well crafted self-parody.
Yeah, true.
And then just kept doing kind of desperate TV shows after that that reinforced who he was before Extras.
Madness. Yeah, true. But yeah, I always kind of wondered if Anger Management was like a real movie or was just really shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway. Yeah, we started watching it and it's back in the 70s. He's a child.
Yeah.
And this girl is like...
He's wearing a Dukes of Hazzard t-shirt.
Yeah. And she's wearing a Chips t-shirt. Yep. And they're like, I like your t-shirt. And
The Adam Sandler films do have a very weirdly superficial relationship with nostalgia.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that whenever there's like the... like, have you done The Wedding Singer yet?
Yeah.
It's the first film I remember being an 80s nostalgia movie.
Totally.
But nothing like it's actually in the 80s.
Yeah,
It's all the most obvious cultural touchstones, like the Michael Jackson glove and like Billy Idol and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet completely fails to be in any way convincing as a period piece.
Yeah. I can't remember if we mentioned that on our episode, but it definitely, there was like a conversation about how like there's like retro, like vintage, nostalgic kind of culture nowadays.
Yes.
But The Wedding Singer like was that, but it wasn't part of the trend of that. It was just like,
no.
Hey, remember the 80s? Does anybody
like
remember?
It's a weird type of nostalgia where, because the how nostalgia kind of works is that it's got to be stuff that has since drifted out of the zeitgeist and it's on the kind of like periphery of your memory and then you go and then you see it again or whatever you go, I remember that feeling. But when it's all the stuff that's still around, like Michael Jackson that was during the Wedding Singer time, still popular and still you know, music was still everywhere, what value is there in going, oh, this was a thing in the 80s?
That's a good point. That is a good point.
Thank you. I'll be making more of these as we go along. Yeah.
I feel like they have some... I don't know if maybe it's just because of... In Friends, they have some good 80s references where me watching Friends, I'm like kind of laughing because I'm like, oh, I don't remember
you watching Friends, me, an intellectual, not watching Friends.
Yeah. But then I'm not sure if at the time that they made those episodes of Friends, that stuff was still quite fresh anyway. But never mind. The girl is like, Adam, I want you to kiss me on the face. And then he is like just about to do it.
Mm.
But this bully pulls down his pants.
Yes.
His pantaloons.
Yes. And then we see an old woman.
Yes. The whole street erupts in laughter.
As you do when you see a child being victimized.
Yep. Yep. Especially if that victimization reveals their penis.
Yes.
You laugh and point and laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And an old woman is like, yeah, holding up a finger and thumb. And she's like, oh, it's a little shrimp.
Yeah, as if. she expecting from a child?
Yeah, and also, exactly. Outside? I don't know. I mean,
I'm not saying that, like, because obviously it's a joke.
Yeah.
That it's unlikely that, you know, a group of old people would be sharing a laugh about how small a child's penis is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does kind of set the tone for the rest of the movie where everyone in this film is out to get Adam Sandler.
Yeah, totally.
Least it, so it appears.
Totally, yeah.
And I mean, in a way, that is what's happening.
Yeah. And it's really, it's weird then. Yeah, so then anyway, we cut to the present day, and through like an unfortunate series of events, he gets sentenced to like anger management therapy with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, he's on a plane and he
but it's like the things that, but then, and then at the end of the movie, it fucking turns out to be a ploy. Spoilers.
Yeah, let's get this out of the way now so that we can sort of,
but like,
usual suspects it as we go along.
Yeah, exactly. And like the, it turns out to be a ploy that they, and it doesn't really matter why, it's nonsense. But yeah, but I mean, the anger management stuff is real in the movie, but then they just sort of staged it like that movie, The Game. But then in the flashback, the people in the street were laughing at his penis.
Yes, so it's that was a thing. Unless we're talking like that, this has been something that's been going on, yeah, all, like the Truman Show, all of his character's life.
Yeah,
and that actually it's just a series of events set about to frustrate him and make him feel inferior.
Yeah,
which would, I mean, that's an interesting lens to look at the movie through. But I feel like it tips its hand quite early, because when Adam Sandler shows up at Jack Nicholson's anger management therapy session, you know, he says, oh, this judge sentenced me to 20 days of anger management. That's why I'm here. And then Jack Nicholson almost looks down the barrel of the camera and sort of is like, oh, did they now?
Yeah.
Really? So it kind of, from that point, I'm thinking, okay, this is a setup. Because he's been sitting next to Jack Nicholson on the plane.
Yeah.
And that's when the incident happens. Yeah, so it's like, all right, okay, well, this seems like a hell of a coincidence.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly, when they're on the plane, just before the escalation, which causes Adam Sandler to be booked initially.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson is watching a film that is... that is clearly meant to be a kind of very broad, lowbrow comedy movie with like objectivizing objectification of women in it.
Yeah.
Imagine being, I don't know if it was a real movie or not, but imagine being the movie that a Happy Madison production thinks is the idea of like lowbrow, horrible, superficial, nasty humor aimed at the stupidest of cretins. Imagine that film.
Yeah, imagine that. But maybe that wasn't the joke. Maybe you were supposed to be like, well, because... And so basically Jack Nicholson is watching a movie and he's laughing his head off, and Adam Sandler's trying to sleep and he can't because he's laughing too loudly.
Yes.
And the thing that he's laughing at is like a really lowbrow piece of shit movie looking.
Yes.
But what if the joke is that Adam Sandler is a stuffed shirt because he doesn't like comedies, and that movie is like, do you know what I mean? Like,
as
if Jack Nicholson was supposed to be having like a natural, like, fun laugh to himself.
That's an interesting, that's an interesting hypothesis, because later on in the film, when Adam Sandler goes legitimately insane at his boss, and smashes stuff and screams at him like an animal, you as the viewer are supposed to think, oh, thank God.
Yeah,
he's becoming a real person, a real man, a human.
Yeah, yeah.
And not the kind of cuckold weakling that he has been throughout the film. Whereas that character that he is at the start is kind of a vaguely interesting, complex person.
Yeah.
That... you know, maybe does, like, is a person who's in denial about their anger and does need some therapeutic help.
Yeah.
And that scene where he's first in the group therapy, and John Turturro's there and January Jones from Mad Men and X-Men First Class is there as well.
Also Louis Guzman and Jonathan Loren and somebody else.
They're regular Happy Madison players, right? Yeah.
But yeah, carry on.
Well, that's the point. Excluding the weird, like, adult actresses are all crazy nymphomaniac lesbian psycho.
Yeah.
That whole weird thing.
Yeah.
Aside from that, there are moments in that scene where that was the point where I thought, okay, this could be interesting, an interesting kind of character study of this slightly repressed, angry person who is not comfortable with himself.
Yeah.
And appears to be an everyman on the surface,
yeah,
but is actually dealing with some difficult, like an everyman might be,
yeah,
dealing with some issues that he doesn't want to confront.
Right.
But then,
no,
that's not explored in.
They don't let that happen.
No, they don't.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, when we
reality,
I came into this movie thinking it was just going to be a farce where they shout at each other.
Okay.
But then when we started watching it, and he's on the plane, and Jack Nicholson is laughing so loudly that he can't sleep, and Jack Nicholson is like, "Why don't you just watch it with me?"
Yes.
Which is like, you know, if you can't beat him, join him.
Oh, I see. Yes, of course.
And then he's like, "All right, well, I'll get a headset to listen to the movie." The steward, host person, the
flight attendant.
Flight attendant, yes. A prominent part of the movie as well. She is like, "I'll get you one, you know, 2 seconds." And then she goes away and just like chats with her mates or whatever. And he's like, Adam is like, "Can I, miss, you know, can I get my fucking headset?"
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she immediately, like, her reaction suddenly dials up to 11, where she's like, "Calm down, sir. There's no need for that kind of, talk. You know, don't raise your voice and stuff like that."
Which makes sense when you know that she's in on the
She's in on
ploy,
it, yeah.
But then the initially, air marshal, yeah, isn't in on the
not,
ploy,
it turns out to
also,
not.
Yeah,
playing along.
Reacting as if Adam Sandler is getting more and more hostile.
Totally. So, like, the people who are in on the ploy are just mixed in with normal people. But all of them are reacting in the same way to Adam Sandler, who is basically throughout, and is like 30 in this movie or whatever. So, you know, he's been like through his career so far, bottling up his anger and just going along with it like normal. It's not outrageous. Like, he doesn't look frustrated. He's just like acting normally. Their reactions are like, "Whoa, dude, chill. Like, what's wrong with you?" And that suddenly I was like, "Oh, I suddenly imagined that the movie we were going to watch was he is bottling up his anger and he goes to a therapy session, like an unorthodox therapy session, to help like release his anger. And then it changes his life in various ways because he's like been living this kind of like fake version of himself because he's been bottling up, blah, blah, blah." I was like, "Oh, I think that's what's going to happen." But then That doesn't happen.
No, and what's weird about it is that you're supposed to see him as a bit of a kind of loser underdog at the start of this film.
Yeah, but
and yet he's going out with Marissa Tomei.
Yeah,
he has an enormous
Oscar
apartment
winner
in New York that overlooks the Hudson River and the Brooklyn Bridge, I think, and has an amazing skyline out the window.
Yeah,
he's he's doing a job that he actually seems to kind of care about. Like he does seem to enjoy designing outfits for cats.
And he seems to be good at it as well. It's not one of those where he's like, I don't know, like, you know, the movie's not necessarily, well, I guess it is making fun of him in that job, but it didn't come across. It was just like, he has a kind of a weird job, but he's good at it. And even his boss is like, gets him to do the work, but then, you know, like shits on him anyway.
Yeah. I mean, his boss does seem like a bit of a knob.
Yeah.
That's
which
why
is
they
like
got Kurt Fuller to play him.
Yeah. A good knob.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's kind of normal stuff that you would set up in a movie where, you know, and he could be like a guy who's like kind of struggling with normal like day-to-day life issues and work issues. But then when he goes to this therapy and he's like, "I don't need anger management therapy." And they're like, "Let it out." It suddenly changes. He's like, "Well, I've wasted my life trying to just like be normal."
When in fact, the life that he ends up having as a result of the anger management therapy is almost the exact same.
Yes. It is. And basically,
because he was planning to
out
do the thing at the end of the movie that happens anyway.
Yeah. And it turns out that Marissa Tomei was basically the puppet master of the whole
plot. I thought you were going to say the Palpatine. Which,
Palpatine.
Which would also make sense.
Yeah, she's the Palpatine of the whole ploy. Mm-hmm. And basically did it as a kind of like the reasoning that she says at the end is like so casual. She's just like, you know, I could see that you're frustrated at work and it was sort of bothering me a little bit. And I, you know, we're kind of stagnant in our relationship. So I figured I would do something about it.
Like, yeah.
What?
Also.
So like, but he doesn't. So you're saying he doesn't need anger management therapy, but you just decided to put him through that ordeal in order to make him like propose to her quicker.
Yeah, basically, because I still don't understand how this helps him at work.
And he basically, because
the last time we see him at work, he threatens his boss to basically saying in the 2 to 5 years when I get out of prison, he's not going now.
But he does. He thinks that at the time that he's going to go to prison.
And the boss presumably thinks it at the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is the boss in on it as well? In which case, if the boss is in on it, why does he need to be? Why does Adam Sandler's character need the confidence boost to like threaten his boss if his boss already is wanting him to do well and succeed and get the promotion?
Yeah.
And is the well-endowed friend? Is he in on it?
Alan Covert, another one of the Happy Madison producers and a semi-regular. He's in a number of these movies.
Oh, I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, he.
I recognized him as a threat the instant you see him on screen because he's next to Adam Sandler's woman, which
totally.
Clearly in the weird like primal language of the film.
Yeah, they are even. What are they talking about in that scene? Like it cuts to a restaurant and. No, it cuts to a restaurant that he owns, which is called ESPN World. I think he's the owner of it.
Is it a restaurant?
Something, a bar thing.
Where they've got a wall of tellies.
They've got a wall of tellies.
So it looks like a kind of newsroom, like like an editing suite in a newsroom.
Yeah.
But it's a bar.
Restaurant floor. And he also says that he rented it out just for them to hang out that night. And you're like, I don't know. But they're having this conversation where he's like, it's clear that there's some weird like friend zone type stuff going on where he's like, you know, oh, do you ever think we'll get back together? And she's like, no, we're just friends. And he's like, I'm cool with that. And you're like, okay, where's this going to go?
Mm. And the angle of, him, like, there is a plot point in the film where this man has an enormous penis, and that is one of the many threats to Adam Sandler's dominance, but
and he kind of becomes when he sees that, like, he goes to the bathroom to piss, and in the bathroom, incidentally, there is TV screens like installed in the wall above the urinal so you can watch bass fishing while you're peeing.
Oh yes, it is bass fishing, isn't it?
Yeah, good idea.
Sure, yeah.
And Adam like is pissing, and as you do in urinals, you just glanced over at the other guy's junk.
Yeah, that's what every man would do. That's what everyone does.
Yeah, that's
you
what just everybody
look,
does.
You look over, like you betray the trust of somebody else, like disrobing them or like you know breaking cloth in front of you. or next to you, and you have a look. A lot of movies seem to have this thing of, oh, well, everybody just looks and has a look out of curiosity.
It happens in other Happy Madison movies, and I think it was The Hot Chick that we watched as this for the side project. Mm-hmm. I made a note that was like, there's a lot of urinal panic in this movie, because it's like maybe once or twice in the movie or more that is happening, and it's like, the characters are either like, show me your junk, or they're like, don't look at my junk. Mm-hmm. And I can safely say that I don't think it's ever happened to me. And also that I've never looked at.
No.
Because it's not even that in my mind I'm like, I don't want to see other guy's penis.
No.
It's like, if you did, you would then be involved in that person's life.
Yeah, and also,
they might be like, what are you doing? Or like, you know, you got to keep the walls between you and strangers who are urinating.
You wouldn't want everybody. you wouldn't want to feel like every time you go for a piss, other people are looking at your stuff and making like weird value judgments about you based on...
Totally.
It's a weird... Because it's... They kind of try and have their cake and eat it a little bit with this in that they play the penis envy thing as if it's just some like weird societally imposed thing, which it is.
Hmm.
But then they also try and do the kind of ha-ha body shaming aspect of it.
Yeah.
Which is still... That's one of those... That's one of the elements of this film in a way that... It's a weird one that sort of hasn't dated in that it's still a thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's still loads and loads of like small penis jokes in movies and stuff. Yeah. And
true.
I'm not 100% sure what the rationale is in terms of like, how do you justify that in the landscape of trying to be a little bit more mindful of body shaming and stuff like that. But in this movie, like it doesn't even stand out because everything else is so horribly offensive.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't even gotten into any of the gay panic or the weird. I don't even know if you'd call it transphobic because it's kind of drag, it's got this weird
I think it certainly is transphobic,
that it doesn't even really know
exactly it's unintentionally that they're just portraying it as like a farcical kind of comical caricature,
yeah,
and you're like but that's a real thing,
yeah, like, and also presumably
Woody Harrelson,
who plays the I'm going to say quote unquote trans person because I don't think it's in any way an accurate portrayal.
No, yeah.
That he is presumably in on the scheme as well. And also,
yes,
all of the Yankee Stadium security staff would also kind of have to be in on it in order that... That Adam Sandler can safely get into the middle. I mean, how does he even get into the stadium?
He just has a ticket and gets through the turnstile.
Does he have a ticket?
He goes through. There's a shot of him going through the turnstile.
Okay.
So I imagine that he just got a ticket.
Tickets still available on the day of the game. moments before it starts,
and no queues. It's fine.
No,
he gets right in there. There's a couple of weird. We kind of should. Still continue to talk about what actually happens in the movie.
Yes, but sorry, we are skipping ahead,
but I was going to say also there's a couple of bits in this movie where there's like a time dilation type thing, which is a kind of like usually a fun thing to see in crap movies or a jarring thing in like good movies.
Uh-huh.
When like that, for example, where you're like, well, it would have taken him ages if he even could scalp a ticket in time. He would have had to queue up and go through security, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's like at Yankee Stadium on game day. Whether it's
probably Chaka.
You would think so.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it sells out every time. Like, if it's not an important game.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it just like people with season tickets who go and play a few families? Or is it as mental as you would think it would be?
And in the movie, when there's that shot of him standing on the grass... looking up at the like bleachers or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's full.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, that serves as like one of the other unironic, like pro New York, kind of pro USA, like images
mm-hmm.
as the billboard. And then there's a full stadium. It looks quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, I imagine that it would have been difficult for him to get in there, but you're like, all right, whatever. There's another bit when, what the fuck is even happening? He's like,
I was asking myself that a lot.
Yeah. There's one bit when, I think it's when he sees, oh damn, I've forgotten. It's like he for some reason he wants to, no, what happens is he is, I think Marissa Tomei breaks up with him.
Oh.
And then he runs, and then he figures out something like that Jack Nicholson was doing something. I can't remember why. Right. And so he runs to Jack Nicholson to confront him. But Jack Nicholson goes, "You're late." Because he runs to like the anger management meeting. And you're like,
yes. So what, he was like, happened is,
he was like, he, it was one of those movie moments where they're like, "All right, that son of a bitch." And then they, and then there's shots of them driving really fast and they turn up at their door. Mm-hmm. It's usually out of the blue for the other character, you know, like mm-hmm. a confrontation. It's like, "Hey, you're not supposed to be meeting me till tomorrow." And then he's like, "I got to talk to you." But in this movie, it was that he confronted him at a time when he was already scheduled to meet him. But he, then he was late for that meeting.
Yes,
that, like, I'm is sorry, weird. If he was hurrying to get there to confront him, he wouldn't have been late.
Yeah, and we know it's not. Because what happens is he's about to propose to Marissa Tomei early.
Yes.
But he bottles it and yes. doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And Marissa Tomei reveals that what Jack Nicholson's character, Buddy, who is Adam Sandler's therapist in this film, his anger management coach in this
right.
film.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson.
Has advised her that she should break up with him.
Right.
So because it will ultimately be stronger for their relationship.
Yes.
They make their relationship
yeah.
stronger.
Yeah.
So as soon as Adam Sandler hears that,
yeah.
at like twilight next to the river,
yeah.
he goes and confronts Buddy
yeah.
at the next meeting yeah. of the anger management group, which presumably is the next day, because it's right. unless they're doing evening meetings.
Yeah. Well, because in the way
and
that
then,
it's
like
cut
you say, he's
is like
late.
Yeah. The way it's cut is it makes it seem like he goes straight there.
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh, it turned out you were already supposed to be here, but you were busy proposing and not proposing to your wife, to your girlfriend.
Also, it's odd that the rest of the group is supposedly continuing to meet on
yeah.
how regular a basis while, you know, Buddy's up in Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
We never did find out how his mum was doing.
We don't. Yeah, he. I want. Is that part of the ruse?
It must be, because it's all. It's yeah. all to get
To get him to confront the bully.
Yeah, to try and seduce Heather Graham.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question.
Go on.
Let's say Buddy was a slightly less principled person.
Okay.
And all of Heather Graham's really weird overt flirting, where she just takes off her clothes at one point for
yeah.
no reason.
Yeah.
Let's say he was a dirtbag and
right.
was like, "All right, yeah, let's go for this."
Yeah. Yeah, how would that have
how
factored?
Would that have, what was Heather Graham's character supposed to do under those circumstances?
Yeah.
Because she is definitely, we know for a fact she's definitely in on it. Because
yeah.
she's one of Buddy's,
previous, yeah.
like, people.
Yeah, previous patient and,
yeah.
and also an actor, he says.
Yeah. And why is she, why does she go nuts at him about her body issues at the end of the encounter? Is it just to drive him away?
I think it is. That is her legitimate, like, neuroses.
You think
whatever.
Heather Graham is Heather Graham's character is legitimately?
I think that
has body dysmorphia.
Yeah, I think that encapsulates the like dissonant, the tonal dissonance of, or not tonal, but like the conceptual dissonance of this movie.
Mm.
In that it's like supposed to be a ruse where they're like, "He's not really angry, but we're pretending he is so that he acts out and then I can get him into this position, blah, blah, blah."
So
but then at the same time,
we're pretending he's more angry to make him angry.
Yeah.
Or to make him, or he is really angry.
Yeah.
We're calling him on it even though he's not expressing it.
Right.
To bring it out.
Yeah.
And they're, but then
there's other people who don't know that they're doing that as a ruse who are also doing that, who are like, "Oh, this guy, I can see, it's two things at once. I don't understand." And Heather Graham is like, "Yeah, sure, I'll pretend to be trying to, like, I'll pretend to be weird enough that he can get me to go home with him with, like, a really bad line."
Yeah.
But then at the same time, she's like, "Meanwhile, I also am really concerned that you're going to call me fat when I take my clothes off."
Yeah.
Which I But she does, like, without him asking.
Yes. It's very odd. There's too many variables.
Yeah,
it's...
exactly. They haven't engineered it.
No.
You know, like, there's all the dials, and they're just all pointing all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very unconvincing as a sort of heist, which it kind of yeah. is. It's a sort of emotional heist.
Yeah.
But in the vein of, like, the films that kind of reminded me of, for the most part, with the exception of the fact that it does turn out to be a sort of ploy at the end, but it reminded me of, like, there is a kind of a weird genre of films which is slightly repressed guy,
yeah,
who seems to be kind of superficially functional,
yeah,
has a complete, like, overbearing person enter their life and sort of weirdly torture them through yes. an entire movie. Like
yeah.
the cable guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's sort of an inversion of What About Bob, the movie, the Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss or Dreyfuss movie.
I haven't seen that
where
one.
Richard Dreyfuss is the self-help guy's written a self-help book.
Right.
And Bill Murray is somebody who is very kind
yeah,
of emotionally... unstable
yeah.
who has yeah needs this book to survive
right yeah
and then ends up somehow kind of living with
yeah, yeah
Richard
yeah.
Dreyfuss and taking over his life
yeah
even a movie like Bean the Ultimate Disaster Movie functions yeah. along similar lines where somebody's who again seems to be fairly functional but a little bit neurotic's life is
yeah.
completely destroyed by this chaos element
yeah, yeah.
entering it and doing yeah. the worst possible thing in every situation.
Totally. Yeah, I think also Planes, Trains and Automobiles is quite similar.
Yes.
Because they get lumped together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a smart one compared to Anger Management at least.
Yeah.
Because they don't choose to be lumped together. Whereas, well, I mean, Adam Sandler hasn't chosen to go into therapy, but it's like, it is engineered in some way.
Yeah.
But yeah, in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, they just end up having to get on the same buses and stuff like that. And John Candy's just unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, they've taken that movie or the template of that movie and added a weird element where it's like, John Candy is pretending to be unbearable in order to get under Steve Martin's skin,
mm-hmm.
in order to pull him through this therapeutic, like, catharsis where he's yeah. like, I know he'll feel better after I've pissed him off, so I'll have to push all his buttons to get him there.
To be honest though, if that reveal hadn't happened
yeah.
where it turned out that actually Jack Nicholson was kind of, he was sort of all right and everything was for a purpose,
yeah,
then the film would have been maddening for a whole different series of reasons where
yeah.
it would make his behavior would make
yeah.
no sense
yeah.
other than that he is an absolutely unhinged person.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because when the stuff with his boss is really one of the main, like, weird, like, segues from logic in the movie where he, and it could be, you could also see it at that point in the movie that it could be like a weird, it would have been fun if it was like a weird like sort of tragicomedy type thing where it was like people around him just see him as really violent and aggressive even though he's clearly not.
Yeah.
And then they put him through anger management and it just like creates his anger, like he like it comes out, you know, like
yeah.
almost against his will, but then he leans into it because he just becomes like a villain. And at the end of the movie, they're like, we've created a monster.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of fun.
That would have been
Because then he smashes up his boss's office.
Yes.
And is just really angry.
Uh-huh. And that's supposed to be him at a more emotionally healthy place.
Yeah, where he's...
at the start of the movie.
Yeah.
Where it's that kind of weird Clark Griswold in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation type of adversity where the adversity he's facing in that film is that he's not getting a bonus that would allow him to buy a swimming pool for his already giant house.
Right.
And as a result, they kidnap his boss.
Yeah. Right.
Who ends up kind of learning his lesson by being kidnapped.
Right.
And giving him his bonus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of exactly that. Like
Kurt Fuller's character, Adam Sandler's boss in the movie, needs someone to go insane in his office and physically threaten him in order for things to work out and harmony to return.
Yeah, because it's one of those situations where he's pissed off with, like, he doesn't like Adam Sandler in the movie. He thinks he's pathetic and he gets him to do all his work and doesn't give him credit and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but if he were to stick up for himself and stand up to him,
yes,
he would respect him. And that's ultimately what a boss wants, is to respect their employees and be like, this guy's good. He threatened me with a knife once. I know he can handle or something.
Yeah. What kind of lesson is it that comes out of that? Like, because it feels like a sort of weird revenge fantasy thing. It's
it lacks the... What you imagine at the start of the scene when he's made this like presentation thing for his boss, and his boss is like, I need that presentation. I have to show it to the guys. You know, he's gonna just take all the credit.
His boss is calling him like numbnuts and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And instead of doing the actual presentation, Adam Sandler has just created pictures of his boss looking stupid, basically.
Well, more than just looking stupid.
Yeah.
He has photoshopped weird, grotesque, like goblin men versions of his boss, twisting like cat's nipples and things.
Yeah, true. Which is like, he does that quickly as well.
Yeah, very quickly.
Really fast. But like, and you think
that's because he has that weird software on his computer that allows him to manipulate a two-dimensional image of a cat, but for it to have realistic or sort of cartoonishly realistic reactions when he alters its proportions.
Yeah, because he needs to design clothes for cats that are overweight to make them feel less self-conscious, which I think is a funny...
Do you think that's a little... subtle and inverted commas reference to him pandering to fat cats? Like, he is kind of cosseting fat cats by doing all their work for them and giving them a more comfortable position. And
they could have made that a thing if the cat was a dick as well, because the cat he has a real fat cat in his office.
It's kind of neutral, isn't it?
Yeah, and it just is like enjoying, it's just comfy.
Yeah.
If the cat was then like pissing on his paperwork and like biting him and stuff, you'd be like, and he was always like, oh, I'm sorry, here, have another beret. Then you'd be like, oh yeah, he's pandering to the fat cat.
Yeah.
But anyway, bit in the office when he starts and he shows that to his boss and he's like, and it's like a fuck you.
It's a very strange fuck you.
It's very weird.
It's a
very
fuck you
creative.
That would immediately raise alarm bells and red flags about this man.
Yeah, and you'd do better to just quit. But he's not quitting. Instead of it being one of those scenes where somebody stands up to their dick boss and decides like, oh, I'm going to keep my humanity instead of working for your fucking money.
Yeah.
He doesn't quit. He just blackmails him, but with violence. He's just like, here's what's, you know, like, he smashes up his office and then he's like, here's what's going to happen. After I come out of prison, you're going to give me a better job. And his boss is like, okay. So he just threatens him with violence.
Yes.
And he gets what he wants and then he goes away.
Yeah.
So presumably, once he finds out it's all a ruse, like you said earlier, he does go and get that job. And his boss is just forever scared of him.
Yeah.
Which is healthy.
It is. It's a kind of lateral move to present him with the portfolio of odd, unrealistic looking photoshops of his boss fooling around with cats.
Yeah.
Before the violence intimidation tactic.
Yeah.
Because the first part's just kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really need to factor into the plan other than as a sort of weird visual gag for the audience. And I'll grant you, it is
it's kind of funny. Yeah.
But it's the reason it's so funny is because for some reason, all the images look completely artificial. And like, there's points where his boss's face is even altered, like,
to
have odd proportions and everything.
Yeah. Which even at the time, in that, just before, like when he first just looks at it, and it's just before any reaction from the boss or whatever, as in the audience, me, I was like, how did he get those photos of his, how did he make those? Like, because it's not that his face is like cut out of a different photo and stuck on
onto a naked body.
Yeah,
no,
it's like it's face merged.
Yeah,
like,
or somehow he has cut and pasted the face meat of his boss.
Yeah.
And just created a, like a torso kind of homunculus out of swatches of his boss's flesh.
Yeah.
The better to...
And also that...
Humiliate him.
The cats that he's fooling around with do have, they do have the clothes that he's designed for them.
Yes, that's
so
nice
it's
touch.
the real presentation that he's been working on.
It's fit for purpose.
Yeah.
He has at least done the work.
Yeah.
He can't be criticized for that. But
that would have been a joke that you would play. The whole boardroom is waiting. The lights are off. They're like, presentation
is ready.
There's
no one else there to see it.
There's nobody else there. He only shows it to his boss.
It doesn't even make good blackmail material because it's so fake looking. And it's not just like unconvincing Photoshop fake looking. It is clearly a decision that it looks unreal.
Yeah, because like, it's stretching out the nipples like 2 feet or whatever.
Yeah,
and there's
and
like tongues winding around each other and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's just like nightmare imagery. And he's just like, by the way, I made that for you.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to smash your golf clubs up.
And this will somehow lead to me getting where I want to be professionally.
Because
I imagine the minute he left that office, his boss phoned the police.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would just say yes. And then if the guy came back to try and go to work, you'd be like, security will take you now.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking weird.
It is very odd. There was one bit in the film, one kind of line once that was a vaguely sort of subtle, well-written bit that I quite liked. I should say that in fairness to the film.
Right.
Like there were a couple of legitimately funny sort of pratfalls and things.
Yeah.
But there was one great bit where it's the first group therapy session that Adam Sandler's at, and Jack Nicholson, Buddy, is there kind of coaching, and he gets Adam Sandler, is it Adam Sandler or one of the other characters, to say this sort of mantra is derived from an Eskimo
saying
or
whatever.
Something.
And it's like,
and the reaction
ooh-ha.
Of the rest of the group is great because the most of them just kind of go, oh, Eskimos seem nice.
Yeah.
As the complete, like, idiot, stupid, kind of culturally insensitive American response to it. But then one of the others just says, I think Eskimos seem smug.
Yeah, they seem smug.
And he is the most outwardly angry man as well.
Yeah, totally.
And it was a nice, it was two nice takes, both of which were kind of understated jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
That weren't lent into too heavily. That was like the high point of, oh, this film might end up being quite good.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And then it tanked quite spectacularly when the cable guy element, like, basically as soon as Jack Nicholson's character tells him that he has to come and live with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's what the movie's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the first reason that he, like, he's on the plane and then he's like, I need my headphones. And the fucking air host, what are they called? Flight attendant is like, calm down. And then it's just cuts to, well, no, then the air marshal is like, sir, you're going to come and have a chat with me. And he's like, I don't know what you're doing. He's like, calm down. And then he tases him, and then it cuts to tases him right on the heart, and then it cuts to cuts to a courtroom.
There's
scene.
A lot of very potentially dangerous circumstances, like when Jack Nicholson's character introduces him to his old bully in order to get them to fight.
Yeah.
But the bully is not in on it, I'm assuming, because they do have right. a real fight.
Yeah, and he loses composure. Like, he's not waiting to fight or anything, because he's a Buddhist at this point. And when he taunts him about his sister and stuff, he then, like, starts getting an eye twitch and, like, starts to go a bit, sees red.
Mm.
Yeah. But, yeah, then he on the plane, he gets tased in the heart.
Yes.
Then it cuts to court, and the judge is like, you are despicable. I can't believe you assaulted the flight attendant and stuff like that. Like, we don't really see that in the movie.
I was thinking that as well. I thought I just kind of missed it.
Yeah. Which is maybe like, is that one of those times where they say that happened and they're like, oh, like, because he won't remember because he got tased and he's passed out. He doesn't hit anyone.
Maybe there is like a quick insert shot where he's like puts his hand like on flailing. The flight attendant or
maybe,
something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's, but in that point in the movie, you're like, this is really weird. Like, they're going out of their way to penalize this guy for no reason that I can see.
Mm.
And I can't think of any reason why a movie would be like that. You know, because it's not like falling down or something where it's like he's unhinged and little things are pissing him off.
Yes.
Because little things can be annoying. You know, if you get your burger is really wet or some shit, that can be annoying.
Uh-huh.
You can understand why if a guy was unhinged, it might drive him over the edge. But in this movie, he's not unhinged and the stuff is happening. Well, nothing really happens and people just are outrageous.
And there's no real situation in the film where he becomes angry, where anger is not an appropriate response in that situation until later in the film.
Yeah.
Those things happen more frequently.
Yeah.
The more of this therapy he has gone through.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the therapy is literally just, it's awful. Sometimes these movies, I find them a little bit difficult to watch. They like the cable guy type thing where you're just like, this guy, I don't want to even be in the same room as his character on the screen.
Yeah, it's too kind of mean-spirited because you're just willfully torturing a character.
Yeah.
A sympathetic character.
Yeah.
On the off chance, like with the assumption that an audience will find that funny.
Yeah.
Like consistently funny, just watching somebody be abused.
Psychologically abused
totally. For an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which is not comfortable.
No, and especially in this setting, because it's like, it's so forced. Like, Adam Sandler does nothing, and everybody around him is like, just lumps him with this stuff. Like, so then anyway, he gets sentenced to anger management. He goes to the class, and he's like, you know, just like put me in for 20 minutes and then sign me off because I don't need to be here. And Jack Nicholson seems to be like, sure, you got it. No worries.
Yeah, just come to one session.
Yeah.
So I can say you've been.
Yeah.
I'll sign your paperwork and let you go.
Yeah. But then that's a ruse.
That's the start of the ruse. Phase two, I guess.
And even at that time, it's clear that Jack Nicholson doesn't intend to let him go. Like, you just think that he's like a eccentric character and he's like, all right, you got it. You know, and then he's got some game that he's going to play. But like, he goes to the anger management and then he gets assigned John Turturro as his like sponsor kind of thing.
His anger ally.
Anger ally. Yeah. So like you get an anger ally who is like another person struggling with anger issues to like call if you're angry or if they're angry, they call you. And
which seems like a very healthy thing.
Yeah.
Two incredibly angry, unstable people.
Yeah, exactly. And then
who don't know each other.
Yeah. And John Turturro calls him and is like, I'm feeling angry. Like, let's go for a drink. And they go to a bar. And then John Turturro is like, that guy, you know, he starts a fight. And
again, is that guy in on it? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Is the anger management guy in on it? Oh, no, the blind guy must be in on it, right?
Well,
because he's in the courtroom and shit.
Yeah, but the anger management group does exist. And John Turturro is a real patient. And he starts a fight. So it's maybe like his own anger issues that we're seeing in that scene.
Are all those people actually patients? Like, Or are they former patients who are now part of the, like, heist, the emotional heist gang? In which case, unclear. Is Adam Sandler going to become one of them?
Yeah.
Is that what the TV series is? It's them pulling off a series of increasingly ambitious heists on other people's emotional and mental health.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so.
That would be... I'd watch that.
Well, yeah.
For a couple of episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's... I feel like at the end of the movie, the anger management, like, therapy, Buddy, the doctor, exists as a real thing.
Yes. Well, yeah, no, he definitely does, because he's written that book. That's how Marissa Tomei enlists his services.
So she hears about him from his real life career.
He is an actual...
Like, and then she gets him to do this help.
Mental health professional, which seems insane.
Yeah. But then, yeah, so then...
Sorry, I keep using terms like insane and mental when I'm deriding the film's grasp on mental health issues. I maybe want to watch that a little bit. But it's difficult to think of appropriate terms to describe the tone of the movie without using
true
slurs on... The sister as well at the start, who's
the bully's
in a straitjacket, bully's sister.
Like, the bully that pulls down his pants, like, somebody is like, oh, he's such a big bully. And he's like, he's just acting out because his sister lost her mind. And it cuts to his sister, who is just sitting on the steps.
In a straitjacket, in broad daylight.
Yeah.
In public.
Yeah, just by herself.
Because that's what you do in the late 70s when somebody is...
And she's like, bleh, 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 like mouthing, making some noises. Mm-hmm. And she's never in it again, but they do mention her an awful lot.
They mention Adam Sandler's character molesting her.
Yeah. Again and again.
It's a particularly uncomfortable sequence. Yeah. And then there is a moment which kind of... inconsistently does make sense within the context of the ruse, where Adam Sandler mentions, because the idea is that Buddy has made up the thing about the molestation to get John C. Reilly's character angry.
Yeah.
And then Adam Sandler says in the car on the way back, oh, I sure do feel bad about molesting his sister all those times now. And Jack Nicholson's character kind of goes, what, you mean you actually did molest her? And he says, oh, no, I'm joking. Which, if Buddy is on the level, that is an appropriate response, where that completely, like, sideswipes him. And because that would change everything.
Yeah, like, if his ruse turned out to actually be true, he would be like, oh, well, that's serious.
He uncovered some horrible thing about Adam Sandler's past that maybe he should be in prison.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be bad.
That would be bad. But yeah, then John Turturro starts a fight, and there's a blind guy there, and Adam Sandler accidentally, like, elbows him, and the blind guy happens to be played by Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah. Well, no, he wrests his cane from him and smacks a waitress in the nose breaking her nose.
Because the blind guy is hitting him, and so he's like, get off, and he grabs the cane, and it smacks the girl.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdly high-profile actors that just suddenly turn up for bit parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton plays a blind barfly. Yeah.
Who has, like, one line.
Yeah. John McEnroe is in it briefly for one visual gag, which,
and he's
not an A-list actor, obviously, but, like, he's just in a weird cameo that turns up in the movie.
Yeah. And he's in a few. He's in, like, Mr. Deeds as well.
Okay.
And something else, I think. And obviously, like, he had, like, anger issues or whatever.
Yeah, that's the joke there. And it's nice that it's sort of underplayed in that
he's only in that one scene. Yeah, like,
and nobody goes, John McEnroe.
Yeah, totally.
You know, he's just in a, like, kiddie corner with a bunch of toys lying down on a sleeping bag.
Yeah, it's quite random. I think that confirms that's a real therapy session.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, he's not just there for kind of...
never see him. His role in the ruse would be to just be in the corner. Mm. So he's obviously there for his own reasons. What a strange movie.
No, well, I have another question about the ruse.
Go on.
So there's a bit in the movie where Jack Nicholson's, a relative of Jack Nicholson's, supposedly calls him while he's staying with Adam Sandler.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because after he smashes the waitress in the face,
yes.
The judge, it cuts back to the courtroom and the judge is like, right, I'm sentencing you to prison. But then Jack Nicholson is like, hold on a second, judge. I'll take him into like my intensive anger management course.
Yes.
If you can, if you know, and then if he succeeds, he'll avoid prison.
Yes.
And then, so the intensive thing is that he basically moves in with him.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, right, yeah. So Buddy's living with him. And it's driving Adam Sandler up the wall,
understandably,
obviously.
Yeah.
And then he receives a phone call for Buddy from a relative of Buddy's, saying that Buddy's mother has been taken into hospital in Boston, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just minor surgery, but she should go up and see him.
Yeah.
So after like some weird prank misunderstanding thing where Buddy tries to imply that it's more serious, and then Adam Sandler's character tries to imply it's more serious, and Buddy goes into some very odd emotional histrionics. Buddy basically hijacks Adam Sandler's character into going up to Boston with him, which we assume is part of the ruse to get him to confront his former bully and take him through this weird Heather Graham experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they go up to where Buddy's very clearly visible Land Rover is parked.
Yes.
And there's another car behind his.
Yes.
Blocking him. Very.
Yeah, they're completely blocked in.
Right behind him.
Yeah.
Right? In an unrealistic looking way.
Yeah.
And he puts his card in the way that Buddy chooses to deal with this is to get out, smash the window with a baseball bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the handbrake off or whatever. Yeah. Back into the car and push it back a little bit, but ends up falling off the roof.
Yeah.
And he's put his card in it with his insurance details.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to confirm that he is, you know, really an odd man.
Yeah, because even Adam Sandler is like, what the fuck was that?
Yes.
That was anger. And he's like, no, it's not anger if I gave my card to be like, call me to sort this out.
Yes. And so that seems to reinforce that this seems to all be part of the ploy to make him seem very odd in order for Adam Sandler's anger to come out, right?
Right, yeah.
And particularly with the positioning of the car, it seems like all that has been contrived as part of the ruse.
Yeah.
So at the end of the movie, when they're having a party, and then Adam Sandler gets a guy to impersonate the man whose car has been knocked off the building, with the insurance details in it, he could... confronting Buddy with a gun, which turns out to be a water pistol, which is a callback to something earlier in the movie, which again seems grossly irresponsible.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson's character is genuinely scared.
Yeah.
He doesn't realize that it's a ruse. So he must think that there is somebody who believes that his car, whose car has been knocked off by him with the insurance details in it.
Yeah.
In which case, that was a real person's car.
Yeah.
That Buddy smashed in the window of and knocked off a roof.
Yeah.
So there are consequences. Like there's a ripple effect in this film of just abuse that filters out into the rest of the world and can't be making it a better place in any way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I definitely think that the way they act is completely irresponsible. Yeah. Like the doctor, especially. The Dr. Jack Nicholson, his anger management tactics are like absurd, but then they're also not because he's just an absurd man.
He says at the start, he says very early on, temper is the one thing you can't get rid of by losing it.
Yeah.
And yet the whole sort of thesis of the film seems to be that what Adam Sandler needs to do more often is lose his temper.
Yeah. In order to get him out of a rut.
Yeah. He needs like explosive emotional catharsis, otherwise he will implode and you know and destroy everything around him. But what they seem to be trying to do is to get him to do that.
Yeah,
to get him to for all that rage to come yeah. out in a really damaging way.
And the circumstances leading up to Adam Sandler like flipping out and smashing up his boss's office, like are like they're mean and bad things that happen to Adam Sandler. Like, and it seems to be tipping towards Jack Nicholson has done all this just to get with Adam Sandler's girlfriend.
That's the implication at this point in the film, yes. Like, even though it turns out that that's all part of the ruse.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the ruse just, it's very tenuous.
It doesn't. I mean, considering I suspected from nearly minute one that it was a ruse perpetrated by Jack Nicholson, I didn't see any sense or logic to it throughout the film.
Yeah.
Like, there was no, there's no clear demarcation between what is part of the plan and what is a sort of incidental real world detail that happens to, be affected by the events of the film.
Yeah.
So it's it doesn't.
He's a chaos technician. He just is like, this is my anger management tactic. It's just to drive people fucking crazy.
In the hope that makes them sane.
Yeah. And the bit with when he smashes the car window with his baseball bat in order to like gently nudge it out of the way with his car is like, that's outrageous behavior. That's like,
it is.
And then
it
later,
is outrageous behavior. For one, no place in a comedy movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And for one moment at the end of the movie, you were like, oh, it was just a ruse to, like, he did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, like you said, it turns out that part wasn't actually part of the plan. So there's this fucking doctor who's like, the professor of anger and like, well, you know, I'll cure your anger issues. But he goes about in the world in general, just occasionally sidestepping into like acts of like sudden violence.
Yeah.
Just when things don't really go his way.
Like stopping Adam Sandler's car in the middle of the George Washington Bridge or one of the bridges across the Hudson. Yeah. He manually just pulls, I think, the handbrake and stops Adam Sandler's car in front of a line of traffic that cannot be part of the, like, they cannot all be bit players this plan and forces him to sing a Gilbert and Sullivan, not a Gilbert and Sullivan song, a Stephen Sondheim song from West Side Story in a slightly racially insensitive accent.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, Adam Sandler's character kind of adds that flash of color on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there's a lot of gay panic in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a bit where Jack Nicholson decides to sleep in Adam Sandler's bed with him.
Oh, yeah.
And tells him that he likes to sleep naked, which, you know, even though it is a horrible gay panic moment, particularly when he said that in Europe it's not uncommon for
three or four men
to share a bed, and then Adam Sandler says, that's why I'm proud to be an American, which is
very
manages
weird
to be racist and homophobic one fell swoop. But also, like, Jack Nicholson's character, like, getting naked, forcing him to be naked in his bed with the threat of jail if he isn't, and then later on basically threatening him with jail rape if he doesn't do all the things he says.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an abuse of a far higher order than whatever, like, mild anger problems Adam Sandler is accused of having.
Yeah.
Other than the breaking of a person's nose, which, in fairness, is accidental.
Yeah. And at one point, Adam Sandler phones his lawyer to be like, I think this guy's crazy. And his lawyer's like, well, if you can prove it, then we can get your case overturned or whatever.
That's another point. Is Kevin Nealon the lawyer? Is he in on it?
I don't think so.
Is it legal for your lawyer? Because he is his lawyer.
Yeah.
Is it legal for your lawyer to take like, pl- part in this weird charade.
Yeah.
Where you're told that you're going to prison and being bummed for years by a horrible man.
Yeah.
If you don't take part in this exercise to give you more confidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he phrases it as you'll be passed around like a peace pipe, which I've never heard before. Also, there was a couple of eccentric quotes from Jack Nicholson. We can get into that later. But what was I going to say? What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, the bit when he's trying to record Jack Nicholson on his tape recorder to have evidence of like how crazy he is or whatever. Unprofessional he is. Mm-hmm. Better word. He's recording him, and Jack Nicholson goes, "Take off your clothes." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Why? You want to see me naked?" Like, to try and coax like a unprofessional kind of like accidental confession out of him. Mm-hmm. But Jack Nicholson kind of turns it back on him and is like, "Well, like Jack, like Adam is like, oh, you want to see my dick or whatever?" And he's like, "Well, are you homophobic?"
Yes, there is a strange seems that at the time that this film was made, and certainly within the kind of context of the mindset that made this movie, the term homophobia is purely there to trap red-blooded males who don't want to be around, like basically being sexually assaulted by other men.
Yeah.
That homophobia is an accusation you can throw at them in order to make it impossible for them to escape the weird world of like molestation that somehow the homosexual community and LGBT plus community want to inflict on straight men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a weird mindset that's the same with racism as well, because earlier in the movie with the air marshal, who's not part of the plan, remember?
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he reacts to Adam Sandler saying "you people," meaning flight attendants,
presumably, or
service staff is really what he means, which is kind of offensive in itself.
Or just those two, because it's the fucking flight attendant and the air marshal who are reacting like it seems like they're being quite irrational, and Adam Sandler is like, "I don't really understand what's going on here, like what?" And he says "you people," but it's like the only people that he's interacting with is just those two.
Yes.
And you would be like, "What are you guys doing?"
Yeah.
I want to isolate this just to you and you. You both. Why are you acting weird? That's what I would say.
Yeah, but he gets trapped in accusations of racism and homophobia throughout, which is, it's an uncomfortable watch.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Because it does seem like those things only exist in the world as a way to further frustrate middle-class white men.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, this movie was definitely... I don't know enough about kind of like that sort of subculture of like, I don't know, like sleeper cell, incel type stuff. Just like people who believe that the world is like built against them. But they deserve blah, blah, blah. I don't really know enough about it to go into it, but it really looks like this movie really looks like influential to some people in some current subculture that I don't really know if it exists or not.
It does seem to be fuel even
from the very start, where people around him are acting differently to how he is like projecting. And you're like, is this a movie about the world is being unfair to him, kind of thing? I don't know. I mean, it's quite an uncomfortable and bad movie. But yeah, the bit when he's like, "Take off your clothes. Are you a homophobe?" And then he's like, "Come with me. I got to show you something." And he takes him to like pick up a trans prostitute.
Yes.
Which is Woody Harrelson playing a person called Galaxia.
Yeah, although this particular trans person
Yeah, it's like not
or
trans.
Depiction of a trans person is a better way to put it, probably.
Yeah.
You know, even at one point says, you know, I'm a woman. Oh, I'm not. As soon as he and gets his genitalia or gets their genitalia out. It's difficult to know what's the correct terminology to use for a horribly insensitive portrayal of not e- of like a weird mishmash of self-identity.
It's like you wouldn't normally have a conversation about this movie, but
that's true, you wouldn't.
Yeah, but when we are talking about it, it's just what's portrayed on the screen is like, it's not how the real world feels about any of this stuff.
No, it's like it's as if there were a racist portrayal, but they didn't even know what race they were portraying. Yeah. So it was just like a horrible amalgamation of like a rice paddy hat and like blacked up face. Lederhosen or something. That's what this particular Woody Harrelson's character. That's the only way I think I'm comfortable describing this person is Woody Harrelson's character in the film.
Yeah, and so Jack Nicholson takes Adam to see Woody Harrelson's character, who he's never met before.
A sex worker. I think it's fair to say that that's the implication is that that person is a sex worker.
And he says, "Look, here's $20, whatever. Just get in the back and just have a little chat with him."
Mm.
And it's as if in. I don't know if I've seen that in a movie before where somebody is like, you need to be educated about, you know, other like sexual identifications
educate you than the Happy Madison production company.
Yeah, totally. So we got to take you to the street. You know, something like that. I've definitely seen movies where they're like, somebody's like, oh, fucking hookers. And then they're like, they're real people. And then they have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, except it doesn't make any sense.
No.
Because he's like, you're homophobic. I have to take you to see a gay man so that you can realize that you're being homophobic. But then he takes him to see like a man in drag.
But also they are constantly sexually harassing Adam Sandler's character.
Yeah.
In order to kind of make a point about how he has like bad preconceptions or something. But then... Yeah. Is that even part of the thing? Like he...
I don't know.
Is he...
Because then later, when he's running onto the football field, the guy that stops him is Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
In looking like normal
don't
version.
Don't say normal.
Normal version of Woody Harrelson.
Yes, okay. He's interesting.
he's just like a security guard guy.
Yeah.
And Adam is like... It's one of those scenes where he's like... Oh, I got a secret weapon to get past you.
Which I know that you're secretly...
Yeah, I know that you are secretly a sex worker. And he's like, oh, I don't know. And it catches him off guard, but then Adam actually says, look, if you don't let me on the pitch, the woman I love was going to get married to somebody else. And he's like, well, I can't stand in the way of love.
Yes.
So the fact they know each other doesn't even matter. Because he's anyway just like, oh, it's for love. Okay, well, on you go.
Yeah, he doesn't try and blackmail him with... That is a weird point, actually, because it seems like that's the whole purpose of having Woody Harrelson's character be there.
Yeah.
Is that somehow the fact that Adam Sandler knows the secret about him is what propels him or compels him to allow Adam Sandler onto the field.
Yeah.
But Adam Sandler doesn't try and use that against him, which I guess is cool.
Yeah. He just is like, oh, I recognize you. And the guy's like, from where? And he's like, oh, don't you remember? Like, you taught me about...
You really, really educated me in a very enlightened way.
Yeah. Also, I've seen your balls.
Yeah.
And then he's like, but yeah, so if I don't get on the pitch, I won't get married. And he's like, oh, on you go. Go on, get married.
Yeah, and it seems like a weird attempt to... It's like that bit in Beverly Hills Cop where Eddie Murphy needs a banana to put in the tailpipe of John Astin and Judge Reinhold's car to stop them from following him.
Yeah.
And so he approaches a guy in the hotel who's very camp, who's in charge of a sort of table of fruit.
Yeah.
And which, you know, that might be it's an insensitive joke in itself. And he asks him how much for like a banana or whatever. And the guy's really, really nice and sweet. And just is like, oh, just take the banana. Like, so like a jokey kind of shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like that moment is there to say, look, we know Eddie Murphy said some pretty horrible stuff about gay people in his stand-up, but here's a bit that sort of shows he's friends with them. And that seems like what they're trying to do with this bit where Woody Harrelson's character is kind of, oh, I can't stand in the way of love.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's a nice man.
Yeah.
But it's very confused and poorly judged. That poor judgment seems to be what separates particularly these kind of mid-era Adam Sandler films from films that are kind of, that do work.
Yeah.
Like, the premise of it, there is a rescuable premise in there.
Yeah.
And it's nicely shot and everything. It's
has serviceable
scope. It's cinematic in a way. It feels like a movie, which a lot of kind of the later ones don't.
Yeah.
And yet somehow they throw enough like weird, horribly misjudged stuff in there.
Yeah.
That it actively turns it into an abomination.
Yeah.
When they could have just left it to be okay.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's really strange. It's kind of like it genuinely is like, they could have left it alone. They could have given the script another pass, and just literally just removed,
or not given it that one extra pass.
Yeah, or not. Like,
added the horrible stuff.
Whatever the step would have been that avoided having the extra weird like bits, because there's just a few times, like with the Heather Graham stuff, which is like, as when they go up to Boston to supposedly visit Jack Nicholson's mom in the hospital, who is a character that you'd never see. They are in a bar and Heather Graham walks in and she's dressed in like a red dress and she looks like the woman from The Matrix.
But oh, not, yeah, she does a bit, yeah.
I guess is she blonde? The
woman from The Matrix. I don't know if she is. I can't remember.
It's
been a long time since I've seen those movies.
Anyway, but yeah, like, you know, she's just like supposed to be the typical like attractive female,
which at the time, like in sort of in late 90s early 2000s, that was my idea of what an attractive woman looked like.
If you were to draw one really quickly at school, you'd be like, oh, it looks like this, a dress. Jack Nicholson is like, randomly is like, don't you realize you could have any woman you please? Like, take her. You could get her if you wanted. Go over and ask her out. And Adam is like, why? I've got a girlfriend. And he's like, just do it. Why
is it just true? I can't remember. Yeah. My man.
Yeah. He's like, honestly, that's when he says the peace pipe thing.
Yep.
If you don't do it, you'll go to prison and you'll get raped in prison.
Yeah, which is all part of Adam Sandler's girlfriend's loving plan.
To get him emotionally healthy and for them to get married.
Yeah.
And he's like, go over and talk to her. And he goes over and tries to say, he just says hi. And the woman's like, bite me. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, like, then Jack Nicholson is like, look, what you need is confidence. If you go over and tell her, give her this line, he sets up in such a strange way. He's like, women love confidence. And you're at this point, you're just like, why? I need a reason why he's trying to get him to get with Heather Graham in this scene. Like, is this
life coaching? Do you mean within the rationale of what's revealed later, that it's
just
all out?
At that time in the movie, like, he's an anger management coach. He's not a confidence coach or like a romantic lifestyle coach.
No, that's true.
I don't know if the microphone picked up my phone going, but I shouldn't have said that. If it did, people who are listening will be like, oh, my phone's gone. Anyway.
Alexa.
Yeah.
Play
Anger Management.
Play Anger Management.
The series.
Play Anger Management, the original motion picture soundtrack. Yeah. You'll find some bangers in there that don't belong in the movie.
True, actually,
Heart
a
of
few.
Glass.
Yeah. Some Cream. Which
yeah,
one is
Strange
that?
Brew yeah, in yeah. there.
Yeah, a couple
no
of...
Real, I mean, to be fair, those touches... I guess Heart of Glass was there to establish the time period.
It was
period.
The 80s, yeah, and then Cream was there to establish...
It was, they were in a bar.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, for no reason, he's like, women love confidence. You can get into bed with any slut if you just use the right words.
I know.
It's like,
horrible,
what are you
horrible.
Talking about? And so he's like, give her this line. Hey, I'm really sorry for, you know,
being
I'm
rude
being
earlier.
Rude. I'm nervous around beautiful women when I feel like I'm going to explode in my pants. And Adam goes over and says that to her in like the most sheepish,
no more confident than he was,
zero confidence way. And he's kind of, I don't really find Adam Sandler like overtly funny like to watch, but occasionally he does things that are, it's like a mixture of kind of adorable goofiness and uh-huh. just like, I guess like lewd type of like sort of like nonsense comedy mm-hmm. acting. He does it sometimes quite well. That was like,
he's,
it was
no,
quite
he's,
funny.
He's a fairly engaging performer. Yeah. Like, he works on screen and he does yeah. like a lot of his comedy beats. He does do a lot more subtly than a less skilled comic performer might. Like he
right,
is,
yeah.
he is absolutely
yeah, professional.
Capable of what he does.
Yeah, yeah.
And should really be in better movies.
Yeah,
but like
because he yeah. Well, that's really true. Because in the better movies. He is good.
Yeah.
And he's not like a bad part where you're like, this movie would be good without him. Especially in something like Punch Drunk Love, which is like the like he his performativeness is really like informs the character, like it's there on purpose mm-hmm. and it is like synergistic and works really well.
Yeah.
I don't know why like nobody I mean well, Uncut Gems is coming out soon. And apparently that's good. It's like a real movie.
And I think I think it's his decision to be in.
Yes, to make
horrible.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah,
just barely working. It's true. It is. Yeah.
And
anyway,
out with his friends, which is you know, it's
yeah.
I mean,
true.
Like
it's an impressive career. Anyway, in the bar, he says that to Heather Graham, and she just goes, "Oh, you're so cute. Let me buy you a drink," and then. Like Jack Nicholson bails on him, like goes away, but he doesn't realize till later. And he's like, where's my friend gone? He needs to give me a ride home. I don't even know where his mother's house is. And Heather Graham's like, oh, I can stay at my house. And they're hanging out at her house. She starts eating cake and she's like, what the fuck did she say? Like, you know, I hope you don't mind I'm eating cake. Boy, my last boyfriend told me I was a porker.
Mm.
Didn't want to sleep with me.
Mm.
And then... she takes off her clothes randomly and is like, do me.
Yeah.
And Adam is like, no, please don't. I've got a girlfriend. And she's like,
he actually behaves sort of
yeah.
like, up until the point where he screams porker at her
right.
when he gets
yeah.
thrown out of the house.
Totally.
He does behave quite well in
yeah.
that scene. Like he's
yeah,
not,
right. Like,
he manages to not be insensitive to her for the most
yeah.
part, but at the same time, not be, not betray his girlfriend's confidence.
Yeah, totally. There's rare times when I feel like, especially in movies from like that time period, when there's like the stereotypical beautiful woman character
mm.
is in the movie, but for no reason. Like in movies, they always go, if she is like, you can come back to my place, it's because she wants to horn it up.
Yes.
It never is like, oh, shit, you missed your ride. Well, you can wait at my house if you want. You know, like, they're never just hanging out.
Yeah.
And for a second, it was kind of nice because Adam
yes.
is like, no, like, we don't need to do that. Like, you know, I know you've been programmed to,
yeah,
like, perform in this way, but put your clothes back on. But then it isn't that because she turns
yeah,
out to be, like, quote unquote, like, mentally ill or whatever.
Yeah, I fully expected that... Adam Sandler's character being a all American red blooded male was
yeah.
going to be naturally like naturally completely susceptible ultimately to to falling for the charms of this.
Yeah, especially when, because they set it up in that way where he's like, I could never get a girl like that. And then when he does, he's like, oh shit.
Also, he's going out with Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, I know. Oscar winner.
Yeah.
But yeah, like she starts going, why is it whenever I take my clothes off, you guys never want to have sex with me? You think I'm fat, don't you? And she starts eating cake. Yeah. And it was quite funny because I don't know. I like Heather Graham. I hadn't seen her stuff in her face with cake before.
Go back and watch The Spy Who Shagged Me again. She is not good at it.
Yeah.
But she was actually pretty good in this for those more broad moments.
Yeah.
Even though they were
a
little bit problematic.
Yeah.
But that
there's some.
What I don't understand is,
go on.
If the idea is to show Adam Sandler's character, whose name I still don't remember. Dorbin. If the idea was to show Dorbin that all he needed was a little bit more confidence to, and he could, you know, achieve anything.
Yeah. They could
maybe
have
don't
been
immediately
saying,
tell him that that was an actress that the guy knew, even long before the rest of the revelation about it all being a ruse comes out. Like, what's he supposed to learn from that?
That is true.
Because he didn't achieve anything by being more confident.
That was like a ruse within the ruse.
Yeah.
Because then she goes, oh, do you think I'm fat? And then she starts throwing cake at Adam Sandler and he runs away. Mm-hmm. And he runs outside and it's raining. And he's like, ah! And then he shouts at the house, Parker! Fatso!
Yes.
Which is
not good.
It's not good. And you're like, well, I thought you were sound.
Again, he's at a less emotionally healthy place than when he started.
Totally.
And then he's just turns up at...
He gets a cab there, like, randomly.
But it's like a Land Rover. It doesn't look like a cab.
Yeah, just a car pulls up. I thought when that happened, that was Jack Nicholson pulling up to Heather Graham's house.
So did
house.
I. But then the whole reason why Adam Sandler is at Heather Graham's beach house is because he doesn't know where Jack Nicholson lives.
Yeah.
So how does he...
I don't know.
...get a cab there? Or maybe he says to the guy, to the cab driver... Do you know this famous psychologist guy? Take me to his house. But we never see that.
Yeah.
Take me to his mum's house. Yeah. It's not even his own home.
No. Yeah. I don't know.
Or maybe it is. I don't know if he lives in New York or whatever.
Yeah, who knows?
But he has his group sessions there.
Yeah.
So presumably he's local or has at least an apartment there.
I mean, and when they go to Boston, just before they leave, Marissa Tomei is like, why aren't you flying? And he's like,
yeah, that's a weird detail.
So it's not like that close. So he definitely doesn't live there.
Actually, yeah, no, there's some sense to that where she says, why aren't you flying? And then he says that Buddy has told him he's not allowed on flights or something like that. Which
would be true. The court would tell him that he's not allowed on flights because he's assaulted.
But obviously, Buddy wouldn't want him getting on a plane because then Adam Sandler might find out that he's actually not on a no-fly list. Because he presumably isn't on
true.
A no-fly list.
That's very the game E.
Yeah. Also, all those other people on the plane saw what happened, right?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. I mean,
and that was
I can't
a real
believe
flight
that
had to
air
turn
marshal,
around in midair.
Yeah.
So...
And the air marshal was a real air marshal who later you would have had to explain to him, no, you tased a guy that was... We were doing that on purpose. We were goading him.
And then... Like, so what, the pilot...
You didn't need to tase him. You're like, sorry, I was having a bad day.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of, like, civic disruption.
Yeah.
Having to turn an airplane around in midair and go back to another city.
Yeah.
Just, like, how deep does this go?
Yeah.
You know, how far up the chain? How high is Jack Nicholson's influence?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, normally in these movies where everybody's in on it, it has to be set in like a desert or something where there's only a handful of characters.
What are these desert
well, the game
con
is like,
movies?
The game is kind of like that.
Is it? I've not seen the game.
Oh, I think it's quite a fun one.
Is it based
one.
On the Neil Strauss book?
Possibly.
About, you know, how you need to be an asshole. To, which is basically the thesis of this movie. You should be more of an asshole and people will respect you.
Yeah.
Even though you've already got all those things going for you that you wanted, except for a slightly more high power position at work.
Yeah.
This does feel like a film written by one of those asshole executives who release like self-help business books.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like those guys.
Yeah. How to remove empathy from your brain with a scalpel.
Yeah. 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 There's a huge market for those books and those like seminars.
Yeah.
And the guy, they're always extremely eccentrically wealthy. But it's in this way that's supposed to be aspirational. Whereas I guess because we're Scottish, that we look at aspirationally wealthy people and are like, ugh.
Well, and the sort of the underpinning principle of those things always seems to be you need to stop thinking about how other people are going to feel about things.
Yeah.
And just focus on making more money and being more quote unquote successful.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know? And I suppose that's a reinforcement of whatever the idea is, that if the person is picking up that book, then that's what they want. And that's what they believe is the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's exploit that.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, that's a kind of weird side.
Yeah, weird side bit. I feel just to another pin in that sidey bit, or not a pin, because that means you stop talking about it.
I'm gonna pull a thread from the sidey bit.
That book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh yeah,
I think it's quite weird. I feel like I haven't read it or even glanced at it, but it's from the old days. It's like printed in the 30s or something.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like quite old. Okay. And because of that, I imagine that it's a bit nicer. Like it's just about if you've got low self-esteem, like here are some ways that you can socialize more confidently or something.
Okay.
But the fact that it's phrased win friends and then also has the influence people. Like
also, you know,
how to make friends, how to make them, like how to take the things in your life and in your personality and like communicate them with other people who might feel the same and gently create a relationship. Not
but then,
win friends.
No,
how
I
to
know.
Get, but, how to get the
but
best ones.
If the
ones.
Book were called How to Make Friends and Gently Create a Relationship, then it wouldn't appeal to the sort of mercenary audience that they want to buy it.
Like, yeah, true. Who, and influence people as well. It's like, well, you know, I mean, it's obviously sinister.
The kind of nice person who wants to buy a book called How to Make Friends and Gently Cultivate a Nice Relationship is probably already going to be making friends.
Reasonably,
you know?
Yeah. That's a good point.
We're talking about how do you convince an utter selfish arsehole that you know better than them how to be a selfish arsehole to the point where they'll part with their money.
Yeah.
And influence people.
Yeah. What were we talking about? The stuff with Heather Graham, he calls her a fatso, then he goes to...
Yeah, Porker.
Porker. He goes to Jack Nicholson's house, and Jack Nicholson's like, oh, you should have seen your face. That was a ruse. She's an old student, an old patient of mine. And she's an actor, so I got her to play this rigmarole to put you through something and he says specifically to get you back for when you said my mother was it was a prank because you pranked me with saying my mother was going for serious surgery when actually she's going for non-serious surgery.
Yes, of course, it was supposed to be a prank.
And he's like, I got you back for that, and it's just like, oh, you just had a bit of a wild night at like an hour 10 minutes into the movie.
See, that's another weird parallel with the cable guy, because there's a bit in the cable guy where Matthew Broderick has just been, I think, broken up with by his girlfriend.
Yeah, who's what's that girl's name? She's Judd Apatow's wife.
I can't remember.
She's in like Funny People.
But Matthew Broderick thinks he meets a really kind of beguiling woman at this party and ends up going off with her and having a kind of one night stand and feeling like, oh, that's just what I needed to kind of give me a bit of a confidence boost.
Yeah.
And then the cable guy, Jim Carrey, immediately says, oh, no, that was a prostitute that I paid to,
oh yeah,
you know, to make you feel like you were having a good
time. Yeah.
Again, just to inform the audience where it has no net gain in the plan.
Yeah.
Like, it makes more sense within the case of the cable guy because...
he's just a wild card.
Yeah, and he has no... He is not masterminding some bigger operation, he understands.
Yeah.
He is as misguided, more misguided even than Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
But in this movie, there's no rationale behind it because it serves no purpose to have him go off and have an awkward exchange with somebody to supposedly boost his confidence, but then reveal right away that it was all a charade.
It was all a charade. And then he says, meanwhile, while you were out, Marisa Tomei called, and I told her that, and she got upset when I told her that you were out with Heather Graham.
Yes.
And he's like, why did you tell her? And he's just like, well, I don't know. And then Adam Sandler's like, oh, you're playing a prank on me. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm serious.
Also, it's so interesting like,
the prank is...
It's weird that Adam Sandler immediately goes to... Why didn't you lie to her?
Yeah.
Instead of, why didn't you just tell her that you
tell her that it was
happen?
Yeah.
That this was your idea and that.
So it was a prank.
You bailed.
It was just a prank, a short term, small scale prank that Jack Nicholson pulled just to get him back for what he said about his mother going into surgery. But then it does also participate in the greater prank, the ruse itself. Because later, Marisa Tomei is like, she says something about it. She's like, yeah, he told me about her, like I knew from the start or something like that.
Okay.
And obviously it plays into, like at that point in the movie, it plays into how Marisa Tomei is like, we should spend some time apart.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's because Buddy has specifically advised her, supposedly, that they should spend some time apart.
It's weird.
And what was it they called it? What did they call the specific breakup?
I can't remember. It's
stupid. I don't know why I'm trying to remember this, but they call it like a, they give it a very formal name.
Mm. Like a sabbatical or something.
Well, but it implies like a sort of legal separation of some kind.
Oh, right.
But they're not married.
No, yeah.
I don't know what that... I mean, again, that's not really... Because it might just be something I don't understand or a term that I didn't really...
Maybe, yeah.
I can't remember. It definitely... it sounded like they were going to get some kind of formal separation.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they were presumably only casually seen, I don't think they even lived together.
No, they didn't live together.
She had keys to his flat.
Yeah, but she didn't live there.
I don't think so, because presumably she lived like wherever she moved to after.
Yeah,
she handed him back his keys.
Yeah, very, very strange. And then
trial separation. That was it. Okay. That's right. Now I
right,
get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I see where I went wrong.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Trial That's me separation. Being an idiot.
Fair. That is kind of a weird way to say it.
It sounds legal, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I can't think of when it would be a legal thing. Trial separation from your work.
Well, okay. No, I fully accept that was my...
Our relationship is on suspension.
Yeah, it's in suspended animation.
Yeah. But yeah, then they decide to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they decide... Well, this is where in the movie I was like, when were you seeing his mum? Is she okay? Because he's like...
just breezed over. At no point does Adam Sandler say, so how did your mum's surgery go?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's unclear if they've even been to the hospital because they arrive.
Yes.
Seems like they go straight to the bar. Then he goes straight to Heather Graham's house. Then he goes straight to... Jack Nicholson's house, and he's like, why did you tell her that I was out with Heather Graham?
That's quite good.
And then they get in the car and they're driving back.
Yeah.
To New York.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way, they stop at this Buddhist monastery. But like, yeah, they just get straight in the car. So there's no, I don't think they had time to go to the hospital. But luckily, his mom's fine, because that was just part of the ruse to get them to go out of New York in the first place.
Yes. Yeah.
No, they didn't need to stage that phone call either. He could have just, Jack Nicholson could have just said, by the way, my mom is ill. We have to go and see her.
Yeah. I think that the rationale behind pretty much every decision in this film is, and I can understand this perspective, it's more important for it to be funny than it to make sense.
Sure.
And I appreciate that. That's like, it is a comedy.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting it to be like, I would rather have a good laugh than all the plot holes make total sense.
Yeah.
The problem is that with a film like this, even like a kind of a production where there is a sort of solid backbone of story, albeit like a bizarre story underpinning it, and the assumption is, like, within the context of a comedy movie, you need that as a framework around which you can build a series of set pieces that will justify the movie as a sort of comedic venture.
Sure.
So I get that.
Yeah.
The problem is that all of those set pieces, I think almost pretty much every single one of those set pieces, the assumption is that what is funny to the audience is punching down you have to be hurting somebody else who is in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
That is what's funny. Like, every single set piece pretty much is about that.
Yeah.
The only one that sort of feels like it works as a kind of set piece in maybe a more traditional, slightly more timeless comedy movie is the first group therapy session, where there's a bunch of different personalities competing with each other.
Yeah.
But through the course of it, there's humorous beats, but there's also like, there is plot development and character stuff that works really well, except, like I say, for the weird adult actress caricature. Because even the really camp character in the group, even he is not unsympathetically portrayed. He's kind of broad, but you get the feeling that that's that performer's acting style.
Yeah.
And then John Turturro's character makes a kind of pushes a slur at him, but then the other guy instantly gets the better of him.
Yeah.
And I think you're supposed to think that John Turturro's character is just a bit jaded and doesn't speak for the mindset of the filmmaker. So at that point, I was thinking, okay, maybe this film is going to be
quite
a bit more
aware in that
and
scene.
Not, like, you're just going to have some diversity of characterization, but without appearing mawkish and completely derogatory.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it goes immediately off the rails.
Totally.
You know,
digs a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go to the Buddhist monastery, and he's like, what are we doing here? And he's like, well, this is where your OG bully now lives. Can't remember his name.
Steve Brule.
It's played by John C. Reilly. And he appears to be at peace with the world, at one with nature.
They managed to not really disparage the Buddhist community. They kind of managed not to do that.
Yeah, there's not...
Just about.
Yeah, there isn't too much meditation or prayer or
whatever. He does at one point refer to Buddha as his god, and I'm not sure that's quite how it works.
Yeah, and he gets mad about it. But you're sort of like, no, he's disconnected himself from the material world or whatever.
Yeah, although to be fair, it is made apparent quite quickly that he is not that centered at all and could turn on a dime quite quickly and is still quite a cruel person at heart. So I don't feel like that was a slight at the Buddhist community.
No, yeah, yeah. It was quite a weird scene because Jack, they arrive and Adam Sandler's like, oh, fuck it. All right, well, whatever, let's do it. But Jack Nicholson, without Adam Sandler seeing, he takes a gun out of the glove compartment.
Yeah.
Takes it with him, and you're like, okay, weird, see where it goes.
Yeah.
And then they go, they confront bald John C. Reilly, who is like, I am a Buddhist now. Yeah. And he's like, Jack Nicholson is like, go on, confront him. And Adam is like, look, all those times you bullied me, that wasn't cool. And John C. Reilly's like, you're right. I shouldn't have done that stuff. I was in a bad place and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And then he's like, except for that one time that I pulled down your pants, that was pretty funny. The look on your face was funny.
Mm.
And then he's like, and then Adam Sandler, like, because he hasn't gotten the confrontation that he was being forced to get from John C. Reilly, he resorts to violence, or like to a more violent approach, and is like, your sister who was in the mental asylum, I molested her time and time again.
Well, to be fair, Buddy starts that lie.
Then
Adam Sandler just kind of, sorry, what was his name again? Adam Sandler's character.
Oh, Gordorb.
Gordorb.
Gordorb Klondike.
He buys into it after a while because John C. Reilly's so obviously unrepentant.
Yeah.
That he decides that actually it would be appropriate to imply, outright state that he molested his mentally ill sister.
Right.
Multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. And John C. Reilly starts to get like an eye twitch and gets mean.
Mm.
And then they have a fist fight.
Which doesn't seem too inappropriate a reaction if somebody's said that to you.
Especially if you were a Buddhist because you had become like a reprobate, a bully, a violent person.
Bullying was rooted in being...
In the fact that your sister, like, something happened.
Yeah.
She quote-unquote lost her mind.
Yeah.
I mean,
if it had turned out that the entire film was in the mind of the sister...
Yeah,
that would make more sense narratively.
But in that scene, that's some of Jack Nicholson, the character Buddy, that's some of his most overt like goading and like shit stirring. Uh-huh. Like he's like, go on, confront him, and then he even gives him the line about his sister, you know, like starts that thing, and then they have fist fight, and then he pulls the gun out and points out all the other Buddhists who are coming over to, like...
Help,
I guess. Yeah. To stop them. And he's like, get back, you sons of bitches. And then it turns out to be a water pistol. And then they just run away.
At which point, like, Adam Sandler, when he realizes it's a water pistol, does this weird kind of relieved, again, kind of primal man cry, as if somehow, oh, it's all right.
Yeah, because he looks up. There's a shot of Adam Sandler's face when he sees the gun, and he's like, looks shocked, and his mouth is turned downward, and he's like, oh! And then when he sees that it's a water gun, his mouth turns upward, and he's like, and they just run away.
Yeah, and laugh and scream in the car together like good men.
Yeah. Well, why the fuck? Why does he need to have the gun?
Why does Jack Nicholson's character need the gun?
Yeah. And why does he need it?
Because the Buddhists aren't in on the ruse, and he doesn't care who he hurts while trying to make Adam Sandler more of an alpha.
Yeah. But then instead of just threatening them with the gun, he shows them that it's a water pistol, and they just run away, and they just outrun
them. That's a good point. Again, so it's like he's tipping his hand way too early.
Really early. And it just makes it look like he's mad, like in a classic sort of like... evil genius
maybe
type
that's
way.
That's why they run away.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone was behaving like Jack Nicholson does in this film anywhere near me, I'd probably run away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if the court ordered you to live with that person, you'd be like, fuck. No.
Yeah.
I mean, quite a strange film. I can't believe that I watched it in disbelief, really. Like,
growing disbelief as it continued to...
The stuff that it started to claim that it was doing. Mm. Like, oh, no, but you didn't realize I did it on purpose. You know, like, I was watching. I saw that the way that went down. Mm-hmm. You fucking liar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a film of lies. And dishonesty.
Yeah.
Aimed at, an audience of... undemanding, narratively undemanding, but like entitlement demanding
I mean, does it
people
does it work in yeah, entitlement demanding is true. There's no story, but there is the character beats that reaffirm like your feelings of like, oh, I hate it when people don't get to, I don't know, like, you know, I really wish someone would stand up against or stand up to their boss. You mm-hmm. get to see that in this movie, even though you don't get to see a movie about someone standing up to their boss, you know?
Yeah. I've got a solution to the film's problem, to the Adam Sandler crisis problem that doesn't involve all of this. Mm-hmm. What if Marissa Tomei just asks him to marry her?
Yep. Because she is so impatient that she is like, all right, well, what I need is to engineer a crazy scheme. Mm. She's the Joker.
She is the Joker.
This is a scheme and a half.
Well, I mean, she is the Joker and she has enlisted Jack Nicholson True. To be her avatar. Yeah. Her cipher in yeah. all of this.
Yeah.
There's a meta-narrative going on yeah. where, in fact, Adam Sandler is Bruce Wayne?
Robin.
Okay.
It's in a world after Batman. Batman's dead.
All right.
I don't know why.
Batman's
or
dead.
He's gone. He's gone somewhere.
He's gone.
He's gone to war.
He's gone to Boston.
He's gone to Boston in the hospital. but yeah, what was I going to say just then? The weirdness of the movie, like the fact that the kind of like narrative turns where it's like, oh, it turns out, you know, I did that on purpose so you could see blah, blah, blah. Or like, yeah, the characters act out weirdly, but then later you realize why. But there's like various times where they're kind of doing both, like the Heather Graham thing. She is acting in that scene, but then she's also like, why won't you sleep with me? Is it because I'm fat?
Mm. Do you think that's maybe just an attempt to put Adam Sandler in another situation where he's forced to take decisive action and be assertive one way or the other?
Maybe.
He can't prevaricate or dither. He has to either say, no, look,
yeah,
I'm not comfortable in this situation. I need to leave. I'm not sleeping with you, but don't let this, you know, don't let yourself spiral. I'm trying to help the movie here.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I was thinking. It's like, does it? It kind of would work. It wildly out of context. It as a kind of piece of like absurdist cinema, like what's that one? The angel, the exterminating angel.
I don't know that film.
It's like an old Louis Buñuel movie.
Oh, okay.
From like the 30s or 40s or whatever, where a bunch of rich, like aristocrat type people are having dinner together, but when it comes time to leave the dinner party, they can't. And there's like nothing stopping them, but they just can't leave.
Okay.
And they don't manage to get out of the house. And like outside, it becomes like
Buñuel
this.
As early as that? The 30s and 40s?
Yeah.
I didn't know. Because I think of him as like a sort of 60s. 50s,
yeah, he kept
60s
going
director.
I suppose
Bergman went on for ages as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
And Herzog's been going for.
Yeah, totally.
Forever.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, Buñuel stuff is like. There's a few that are like quite late, like near The Godfather kind of. Or near Star Wars even.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, weird. But yeah, like his early stuff was like Un Chien Andalou, like with Salvador Dali, which is like ages ago with the eyeball.
Oh, the eyeball,
sliced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, in The Exterminating Angel, it's like...
Oh yeah, I forgot that was him. Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. It does go back
clearly.
Quite away.
A cool guy. I don't actually know if he was a cool guy, but cool movies. But yeah, there's that one, and it's about people who just can't leave. And it's like supposed to be some type of satire about like the like social roles that are kind of like, you know, eccentric, unnecessary, but found like also structural to like all of higher society type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense. The movie doesn't make, like, there's no logic, right? Like why don't they just walk out the door? Because it's creating this weird absurdist narrative.
Yes.
This movie, Anger Management, is kind of similar. It's like, just imagine a world where this could happen. Or like, it couldn't happen. It has to exist in a crazy, absurdist bubble.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine in a comedy. That's okay. Like, Ghostbusters couldn't happen in the real world either. It has to be in an absurdist bubble.
But I feel like if ghosts were to happen, well, I don't know. But at least that's treated in like a crazy way. It's like this mad technology we've got.
And it also isn't predicated entirely around the issue of mental health, which makes this entire movie a problem from start to finish.
Yeah, it surely does.
I mean, within the first maybe 3 minutes of the film, we've seen a person in a straight jacket, like garbling incoherently.
Yeah. And then her sibling, who is only acting out violently because he can't come to terms with the fact that she's in a straitjacket.
It's a strange touch.
Like, later in his life, he pretends to be fine, but he's not, until someone comes and coaxes out of him. What happens to him after that? You know, like, how does he come to terms with, like, I still haven't gotten to the bottom of my, like, issues. It's quite sad.
It's sad if you assume that he's not also part of the ruse.
Yeah, true. Like, I mean, they beat each other up, though.
Yeah, that's true, they do. But then Adam Sandler's character also beats up Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Buddy, at one point. And he gets a fake neck brace.
Oh, yeah.
But presumably, in order to justify that neck brace being there, there would have to have been some, like, we see the beginning of some outright violence.
Yeah.
From Adam Sandler.
Yeah, pushes him over a chair or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it just cuts back to the courtroom.
I mean, what if he had killed him by mistake? You know?
It's tenuous.
There's so many potential things that could have got wrong with this plan. Yeah. It's a miracle he ever pulled it off.
Yeah. And that's what it should really be about. At the end of the movie, they're like, what a great ruse. And let's all thank Dr. Buddy for being such a magician of circumstance.
Yes.
And then he becomes the president.
Yeah.
Of the West.
The Western world.
He unites the capitalist nations.
Against the three or four men sharing a bed of Europe.
Yeah. And also at the... Another high-level cameo at the football game.
Baseball
game. Rudy Giuliani is there.
Yes.
Who we've mentioned on this podcast a number of times and is mentioned in Adam Sandler movies like a few times, I guess because he was the mayor of New York at the time that these movies were coming out. And he's in it and he gets to say the line, "You can do it!"
Yes, which is a catchphrase of...
Yeah.
That's in The War Boy and Happy Gilmore as well.
I think so. It's in a few of them. And it's
normally Rob Schneider who says it.
Yeah,
right?
Rob Schneider says it most of the time. And then in like The Hot Chick, which is like a Rob Schneider vehicle, Adam Sandler character has a cameo. Adam Sandler has a cameo and says it. It gets passed around.
Okay, yeah.
But one of the weirdest is the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
Didn't expect to see that today.
Oh, well, there you go. You've got something out of this experience.
Yeah. I feel like we've sort of come to the end of our analysis.
Yeah, there was one thing you were going to touch on, though, which was the Jack Nicholson's weird quotes that he sort of pulls out or turns a phrase. What were you going to say about that?
Yeah, there's a couple of times I wrote something down that he said, but at the same time, there's a few that I wrote down that other people said. And I'll just read them.
Okay, go on.
And then we can get to the one. The first one I've got is, no air.
Oh, yeah. When they're on the plane.
Yeah.
And he just turns off the air conditioning.
Yeah, he turns off the air conditioning. No air. And he just goes, no air.
I guess that's just the first sign. He's the alpha here.
Yeah.
You're going to be uncomfortable, Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, like...
Also that it takes place in a hostile alien world.
Yeah, and that it's that there will be no room to breathe for Adam Sandler.
Yeah, totally.
Movie. He will be given no oxygen. Yeah. And will therefore achieve a sort of state of brain death that will allow him to be manipulated by all the other dominant people in his life into being this weird monster person that they've created for him, where he's a sort of Dahmer zombie where he just goes about smashing stuff. I'm going to get a big job now, Mr. Boss. You gotta smash things unless you make me boss. And the boss just goes, oh, okay, please, yes, I'll do it. Don't kill me, Mr. Sandler, please.
Yeah.
That's the dream scenario.
Yeah, totally.
And then he gets to kiss his soft wife's face.
Soft.
Well, she has, she's got like a weird, like, dewy... that's a hard D I'm putting in there. Dewy quality. Oh, yeah. Like, her face is very kind of weirdly, like, pink and sort of as if she's just been crying throughout the whole film.
It honestly looks like her features, I imagine, are quite... Like, she's quite a dewy person, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
she is, yeah.
She's pretty and, like, is, like... She's not like gaunt or like exactly super lean.
No, I mean, she looks healthy.
Yeah. She's healthy. Well, gaunt is the wrong word, but you know, like, she doesn't have like a square face or like a hard face. She's got like a nice soft face.
But
the makeup that she has on is like pink blusher.
Yeah.
Like, but not on her cheek, not only on her cheeks, at her cheekbones. It's like, it goes right up under her eyelid. Mm-hmm. So it's like the whole bottom. Like it's leaking from her eye and just staining her cheeks pink, and everybody's like, "She's beautiful."
it's
like she's been slapped.
A lot of people are slapped in this film.
True. Is she slapped? No, she can't be slapped.
No, she isn't slapped. No, wait, hang on. There's not as much slapping as all that. I'm thinking of the movie I watched like 2 nights ago.
Well, what was it?
I watched the film John Tucker Must Die.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on your coffee table yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Please don't draw any conclusions about the content of my character from the fact that I own that film. It was bought by mistake.
No, that's totally fine. You can watch any movie that you wish. I feel like there's... I personally feel like at one time in my life, if I had started watching... random movies that might have tainted my character a little bit, but now everything is at arm's length sufficiently.
Yeah. It's a better movie than this is.
Yeah,
like it's not a great film, but it's...
I feel like just the story concept is stronger. Like I get the girls don't like him.
I mean, and it does, like, it asks some interesting questions, and it, like, there's some genuinely kind of there's a few good comedy beats and a couple of nice... I mean, there's a bit of Sandlerism in it as well, where there's like some really horribly irresponsible things that people do for a laugh, but, you know, it is a comedy. But it does fall down ultimately in the end by not really being able to make up its mind how to resolve any of the questions it's asked.
Yeah, yeah.
But it kind of has the balls to ask them intelligently, at least in
Fair
the first
enough.
Instance.
Yeah.
Whereas this film...
Yeah, it doesn't have the wherewithal to say things.
Yeah, I just noticed how big the bars on. I think I'm maybe holding the mic a little bit close to my face.
No, I think it should be fine.
I haven't noticed. Dial me down a bit.
Yeah, I can fix it after. I haven't noticed any peaking throughout. Maybe once or twice, but you know, what's an episode of Footprints in the Sandler without peaking off the mics? Anyway,
I'll have to take your word on that.
Yeah,
I did.
I mean, you shouldn't say on the podcast that you don't listen to it.
No, I don't have to, of course. I want to listen to it, and I just
you gotta make it seem big. Yeah, you gotta make it seem, you know. What if there's a new listener and they're like, I'll check this out.
Well, no, I think it's important to be honest that I haven't, because I assume there's going to come a point where we have to rate this film, and I don't know how to rate it against the other films that you've seen. Because I haven't listened to your analyses of them.
I suppose, yeah. I don't know where I'd put this.
I have listened to some of it. It was partly just to find out what the audio quality was like.
Yeah, totally. Well, yep. Great is the answer to that.
Sorry, I had a look at my notes just to make sure there wasn't anything that I was missing up. There is a weird reference to the judge's son, Rahim, landing the lead role in Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
And I assume the joke is there that he is might be ill-suited because of his ethnicity,
right,
to portray what is, you know, quite,
okay, yeah,
you know, quite an iconic Jewish role,
right?
But it plays weird. Very oddly. Like it's
a very quiet joke.
Yeah,
like there's no like visual aid in the movie. There's no reference to Fiddler on the Roof or like something like that.
Well, yeah, and so it's the assumption is that it's supposed to be like a slightly smarter joke for, you know, that demographic.
Yeah.
By that demographic, I mean like a more intelligent person watching it. I don't mean people who would be more invested in the Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Although there's also like a kind of seemingly needless reference to anti-Semitism in it as well, which seems a bit like there's a lot of just touching on prejudices in this film, which again, it seems like a decision that has been actively made to make the film worse.
Yeah.
Like just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Totally.
You don't need to.
Like the stuff in the bar scene with John Turturro where he's like, I'm going to start a fight with that guy over there. And Adam Sandler's like, why? And he's like, what does he say? Like, he doesn't like Jews.
He said, but then Adam Sandler, I heard him say something anti-Semitic or something.
Yeah, and then Adam Sandler's like, well, are you Jewish? And he's like, no, I'm half Italian, half Irish, half Mexican.
But I could be Jewish.
Yeah, and you're just like, I mean, if your character isn't Jewish, then why you get him to start a fight about Jewishness? What's the point?
I don't know. I think it was just another nerve that they felt that they wanted to touch.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess similarly, the January Jones and the other girl, who are the two female people in the anger management class.
The class. They're just women. You can say women.
They're women, yeah. Oh, it's because I was calling them girls. I was like,
they're just females. Like, they're
not. Yeah, yeah. They're not like especially young people or anything like that. But they're just in the anger management session.
Yeah.
And they're like these weird, like super eccentric, like porn stars who are like in a relationship as well, but they're like, they're talking about how they were in like a, what do you call it? A relationship with three people.
Polyamorous.
Yeah. And the guy that they were with, like they beat him up and that's why they're in anger management.
And they seem turned on by the idea that, Adam Sandler beat up a woman.
Yeah.
And it's this weird idea again, that like somehow somebody who works in the adult film industry is like a sex crazed,
totally
like a weird sex doll mannequin person.
Because then like later he's like, he thinks that Marissa, he asks them to help him on another prank, which is that he finds out that Marissa Tomei is going to dinner with somebody, and he goes to the same restaurant with, and his plan is to go with a girl to make her jealous.
Yes.
But both of these girls show up and he's like, all right, fuck it, we can do a three-way thing, it'll make her, and they say it'll make her twice as jealous. Mm-hmm. And then he's like,
isn't he actually going to go and beat the shit out of Andrew? Because, well, he says that's what he's going to do, because he finds out that Marissa Tomei has set up a date with who he assumes to be Andrew, and he's like, I'm gonna go beat the shit out of that guy. But he just doesn't want to turn up without a date.
Yeah, I
so
guess
he doesn't look like a loser.
Well, that's another time where there's two things. Like, they, you know, you're a movie, like the narrative needs there to be one thing, right? Like, he either goes there to beat him up.
Yeah.
In which case you just storm in and start beating him up.
Yeah.
Or he goes there to make her jealous.
Yes.
But he wants to do both.
Yeah.
And the writer's like, ah, fuck it. Just, I don't care.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Get him going and not, I don't know.
The woman is there. And like, then it just, he's,
oh, surprise, it's Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out to be Jack Nicholson. But before they go in, Adam Sandler's like, girls, let me ask you something. Does size really, you've worked in the adult entertainment industry, and you must know, does size really matter? And they're like, oh, we always get into a huge debate about this because, like, one of us says that she likes it huge, whereas I think I like it enormous or something like that. Like, I didn't deliver it quite as well as they did. But they're like irredeemably, like, sex obsessed.
But also, if they're in on the ruse and the whole point is to try and improve his confidence, then surely they shouldn't be reinforcing his assumption that, like, penis size is the determining factor in, like, whether or not you are a worthwhile man.
Yeah, exactly. That's maybe one of the times where they are participating, but then they also just inject some of their own opinions. But their opinions happen to be just, like, just nasty, like, transparent, like, I don't know. I'm not asking this movie of much, really, but they're obviously not real people.
No.
I can't remember why I started saying that, but there was some reason that we mentioned, like, who the movie is for or something like that, or just, like...
Oh, yeah, a community who believes that they are just genetically doomed to be, like, people who must demand sex. It's the whole area that that doesn't bear getting into it. I think that's all I've written down.
Yeah, I got another quote. I think this is a John Turturro one. You think you're better than me because you've got both your balls.
Oh, I didn't. That one passed me by.
Yeah. There's the in Europe it's not considered unusual for three or four men to share a bed. Classic piece of fact. And also, I ate bad guacamole and I couldn't stop shitting.
Uh huh.
It's just out of context. At least I've only got one Jack Nicholson one, but he just at one point he says, "Guess who comes out smelling like a white mushroom?"
Oh yeah, that's a weird
line. Like,
what
the fuck is that? Just like occasional references to his incredibly eccentric lifestyle, where he just sometimes brings stuff up that you're like, don't know.
Yeah,
ever heard of that?
What is a white mushroom? Is that a particularly clean smell? Or a good smell, a smell that you associate with,
I don't know,
reliable partners.
And like, if he's referring to like a white mushroom as in like a food mushroom,
yeah,
it would smell one way. But if he's talking about, you know, like a mold mushroom that you don't want, if it's like an unwanted mushroom,
a fungus,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, they're all fungi.
Well, they are.
Like,
yeah.
I mean,
but yeah, not culinary fungus.
Yeah, yeah, just a growth. You come out smelling like mold.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a very different
thing.
And also, Jonathan Loren, at one point in the anger management class, he's listening to the baseball game on his earpiece, and then he's like, "Look, I don't even mind that they lost or whatever." I can't remember what he says, but then he just suddenly goes, "He's like, I'm fine. I'm not angry." And then he just goes, the anger sharks are swimming in my head.
And then there's that weird thing about the guy's sister thinking that there was ghosts in her clothes or something. Like, I kind of like the sort of surrealist touches like as a way of getting around, you know, belittling more serious mental health problems. Like, just having stuff that is completely made up.
I mean,
as problematic as that can be, at least it's not saying, oh, you know, this guy suffers from PTSD.
Right,
You know,
and then worrying
so
about accurately depicting it or whatever.
Wears a big clown wig on his head and has to go around, like, oh, showing his private path to everybody because he's crazy now.
Yeah.
You know, I'd prefer that they played it in, like, just more bonkers, broad strokes, but it's still... It's the fact that they just always get slightly too close.
Yeah.
They can't figure out the correct distance from reality to make it a satisfying film.
Yeah, true. It was a weird experience.
It was.
How
do you think it helped you with your anger problems?
It made me angry.
right? So yes, according to the film's own internal logic, yes, it did help.
Remember the bit when Adam Sandler, no, when they're at Adam Sandler's and it's like a morning or whatever, and then Jack Nicholson comes out of the bathroom brushing his teeth and electrocuting his hair with this blue electricity like contraption thing.
Yep. I know.
And just creating like a weird perm.
That doesn't go anywhere.
And it doesn't matter. It's not a real thing.
Yeah.
It's like a Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I'm electrocuting my hair follicles and brushing my teeth at the same time.
Yeah. It's just another way to make him look mad, I guess.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need any help.
No.
With that.
Yeah.
He's already doing the things which sort of service the plot, which make him look mad.
Yeah. He is quite a weird guy. He's a strange performer. And I suppose,
do you think he improvised anything or suggested any lines? Do you think the white mushroom thing was him?
Maybe. Nowhere. He just occasionally says that on set, and they're like, we could use at least one of the times he says no air.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just ADR. He just turns the thing off in the actual scene. Mm. Doesn't say anything. And later in the movie, he says no air, and they're like, just patch that audio onto that earlier scene.
There is a very obvious ADR line, actually, that Jack Nicholson says in the car when they're heading back from Boston about being like, he says, remember, I think in 22 days you have to live with me for 22 more days or something. It's clearly like from a different audio bit, and I wonder if it's because the continuity of the film was all over the place to begin with, and that scene actually happened way earlier or way later, or they changed the amount of days they had to spend together or something.
True.
But
could
in post production, Jack, could you just not even come in, just phone us and say this line?
Yeah. That's funny. What were we saying? What movie did we watch? What day is it? Who are I? Good ending.
Yes.
So,
do you have a rating system?
We'd have a list, but I don't. Lockie has it on his phone.
Okay. Well, how do you determine this film's, like, any given Adam Sandler film's merit? Like,
There was a time when I was working on a point system, like what is that test system called where you rate things, like the NHS use it and stuff, where you rate things out of 5 of, like, disagree strongly, don't disagree. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like that. It was like questions, and then you could use them to tally it up. But I didn't finish making that. And so we have no system. We basically just watch the movie and then just, like, go on instinct, which works perfectly.
So where would you say that this falls compared to other Adam Sandler films?
I think this
it's
is
definitely not as bad as some of them.
It's reasonably watchable, and some of the farcical aspects make it kind of more watchable.
Yeah,
as long as you don't want to watch, like, as long as you're not looking for a good movie.
Yes.
You know, so it functions as like a random, as a curiosity in the Adam Sandler career that is like way more enjoyable than, you know, like your Jack and Jill or whatever, or like some of the really boring ones like Sandy Wexler.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's crap. I think it would kind of go near the middle, kind of low middle. We've sort of got like a green, amber, and red.
Okay.
And I can't remember them all off by heart, so I'm not going to list them.
Yeah.
But this would be like kind of low green.
What's at the top? What's the best?
We've got The Wedding Singer at the top.
Really?
Yeah, because I think the top is The Wedding Singer, Punch Drunk Love, Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, okay.
And then Funny People.
Right.
And then maybe The Week Of. There's a Netflix one that's that's quite high, that's possibly a point of contention.
Is that the one with Chris Rock's in?
Yeah, and it's like a wedding preparation movie.
Uh-huh.
But it, for some reason, it just was quite beguiling.
Uh-huh.
The wedding the atmosphere was strong enough that you're that it never diverged randomly into like, I mean, it did. There's a whole bit where they put bats in the mayor's office for no reason.
Like that sounds, yeah.
But it still had a strong enough like through line, you know, that right, you feel like, oh, it doesn't fall apart like this movie.
Yeah, although this one is kind of an interesting bridging point in like it's it's like the world of cinema transforming into the Adam Sandler verse. There is the grounding of traditional cinema.
Yeah.
But it's like weird scapula bat wings are kind of unfurling out of it and it's becoming a hideous hell beast.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. It is. And that makes it quite interesting to watch. Especially like if you've just watched Big Daddy and you're like, what's another one from around the same time? And you put this on and you're just like, what's going on? This is very strange. That's what you come away with it.
Yeah.
How odd.
Yes. So you'd put it somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've got the list on my...
What's the worst?
The bottom one is The Ridiculous Six, I think, which is also on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, I remember that coming out. That was sort of around the time of The Hateful Eight. It was like
yeah, and it's just crap.
Okay,
it's like no, I don't. Where is the list? I've only got an old one on there. Yeah, it's crap. It's just like really, it's very offensive. He plays a Native American person,
and
it's just it's offensive in various ways, but it's also just like really long. It's 2 hours 20 or something, and it's boring. And like
2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not uncommon as well. Like Sandy Wexler is also 2 hours and 20 something, and nothing happens. Like Sandy Wexler is a really weird one actually, because it's like supposedly, I think it's like loosely based on a real person who was like his. Like sort of talent agent, like early manager in his career.
Right.
And it's supposed to be this story of like, you know, one of the famous, like the head of like, I don't know, like RCA Records or whatever.
Okay.
Is that the name of that record company?
RCA, yeah.
Yeah. So. Something like that. Like where it's like this, you know, this story, you might not have heard of this historical pop culture figure, but he is behind all these albums or all these movies or whatever. It's kind of like that. But then it also is just like, slapstick and like not about anything, and he's also like not good at his job, but everybody loves him.
Okay,
it's weird. It like doesn't make any sense.
Okay, I'll definitely avoid it.
There's at least one funny bit when he's creeping around in a garden at night and he hears a noise, so he swings this baseball bat that he's got, and there's a raccoon which made the noise.
Okay,
and he hits the raccoon and it is like he hit a watermelon. Like it just explodes.
Right.
Which you wouldn't get in like a, you know, like say it's the movie Ray or
the Ray Charles biopic.
Yeah, exactly. There's
Cause it's kind of supposed to be kind of a,
like relatively serious sort of like, it's a comedy, but it's about a real guy. And then there's a bit when he blows up a raccoon. Like,
well, that speaks to the dissonance that you were talking about where there's this uncertainty on kind of on the part of the filmmakers of what level of reality the film operates on.
Exactly. I think that's quite a common thing that you're just like, I don't see where you're going. Like
the more consistent the level of reality on either side of the spectrum,
right,
the better the Adam Sandler movie.
Right. Yeah.
So you've got Punch Drunk Love on the more real side.
Right.
But then you've also got a film, let's say like Happy Gilmore, which is not set in our reality, but it is set in a relatively consistent reality where it's clear the kind of level of broad farce.
Yeah, yeah, like the internal rules are there.
Yeah,
like it doesn't make enough sense, but it once it starts going, they don't veer wildly out of control or like. To just have random injections of like a completely different tone or like nature. Yeah, I think, yeah, Happy Gilmore is a good example. Big Daddy as well is one where, you can't just, a kid just shows up at his door because somebody thinks that he's the father or his flatmate is the father or something like that.
Okay, so a three men and a baby.
But his flatmate goes away. It's just him. Okay. And he...
Well, but that's what happens at the start of Three Men and a Baby. It's that it's only two men and a baby for a lot of the movie.
Oh, right.
And the third man, Ted Danson, is away, shooting an advert or something in another country.
Yeah.
And there's a humorous misunderstanding about a package that's supposed to arrive.
Right, yeah.
But the baby is Ted Danson's baby. But okay, Ted Danson is absent for, I would say, the most of the second act. Or, well, no, about half of the second act of the movie.
I think in Big Daddy... The father exists, but leaves at the start of the film and doesn't come back.
Mm.
But Adam Sandler realizes that he can use the kid to get girls, I think is the reasoning. So he phones the foster agency, company or whatever, and just says, that kid that you sent, I'll just hang on to him. Don't worry about it. And they're like, great. And then they hang up.
Okay.
So, it doesn't, but at least in that scene, the guy says something about how they're snowed under or whatever. So he's like, glad somebody, glad you can take him off our hands.
Yeah.
So it's like, it still makes sense as a comedy.
It's like Overboard. There's because there's a slight problem in Overboard of how does Kurt Russell manage to take custody of Goldie Hawn when there's absolutely no evidence that she's his wife,
right?
When she gets amnesia.
Yeah.
But they play it as a nice little comedic beat where she has been a complete horror show for everybody at the hospital because she's got all these entitlement issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kurt Russell just shows up, says that he's her husband, and the people at the hospital, she says, he's not my husband. And the people at the hospital just say, well, he seems to like you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's... those little bits that keep the movie safe from just becoming like a wild implosion.
Yes.
Are
implosive anger.
Yeah, exactly. Those bits I think are free in terms of the in terms of the production costs of the movie, in the sense that they come during the writing of the script.
There may be a late night of going over the script a few times and going, right, how do we make
just
this?
Trying to picture it. Maybe you're reading it with somebody else and you're just like let's hear it out loud, let's see if it all kind of fits together. You come across those bits and you're like, wouldn't happen, but it works in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, or like, oh, we need to add in just one line. Oh, he seems to like her,
But the ethos of the Adam Sandler production machine seems to be, at no point should we, the people making it, stress out about any detail of the movie.
Which yields quite an unusual product in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's quite curious. I guess it's quite useful for a writing, sort of educational tool. As you can go through it and really find points that you... If you can watch a movie and find points that you're like, oh, I could have fixed that. I see how you could fix that.
Yes.
And it just kind of, makes you feel better.
So it's an uplifting movie.
Yeah. Your takeaway is I know I am in control of my own. Yeah.
All you need is a little bit of confidence about your abilities as a filmmaker. If I show you how catastrophically bad a film could be, but still exist and have been produced.
Yeah. Totally.
So the film is an emotional heist on you, the viewer.
Yeah. It's a test of some kind.
Yeah.
An intelligence test.
And we failed. We watched the movie.
It's an intelligence test, but it's orchestrated by an agency that went into liquidation. So the reasoning behind the test is now hasn't been declassified and will never be known. Quite an eerie. It's like hauntology.
It's a haunted film.
Haunted film, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it was all together, but then ghosts got in and just started, like, bending the sinews a little bit.
Oh, no.
Just making everything a bit weird.
What does this mean for my brain going forward?
Yeah, well, now, from it's a switch. Now you can only enjoy movies like this.
Oh. Are there any other movies like this?
No.
Oh, no. I guess I better legitimately purchase a copy on DVD.com.
Yes, go on and get it sent to your hard drive.
Yeah.
But luckily there is a series, so maybe it's similar.
Yes, of course I could watch the TV series.
Yeah. I wonder what it's like. I wonder if they unpack any of this stuff. I wonder if it's about any of the same characters. And if it was about Adam Sandler's character, Glorgdorg,
yeah.
Dagon. Imagine if it was just like the aftermath and him just coming to terms with what he's done.
Yeah, four seasons of a TV show of somebody wrestling emotionally with the fallout of this nightmare that's happened to him.
That landed him in like a happier, you know, in quotes, better life.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, but at what cost?
Again, I'd watch it, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
But then that's because I've been reprogrammed. You've been half to now.
Triggered by this movie, yeah. It clicked. Okay. Well,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a wrap up.
Yeah, it's been what?
I think we've been recording for too long, actually.
Yeah, 3 hours, I think, something like that.
I thought it was only half six.
No.
Seven.
Yes.
Well, thanks for coming. See you later.
All right, yeah, okay, bye.
Yeah, you can come back if you want.
Oh, I mean, yeah, sure.
I mean, we'll let the listeners decide, actually.
Yeah, no, okay, yeah, put it to a plebiscite.
I don't know that word.
It's basically just another word for a referendum.
All right, good.
But more kind of demeaning sounding, because it's got the word pleb in it.
True, and it sounds like parasite.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
but it also weirdly reminds me of ancient Greece. Parasite, but plebiscite.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it'll be...
ancient democracy.
Whether or not the word is Greek in origin, the sort of principle of democracy, yeah. I guess, is.
Yeah, I suppose. Good, well...
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, then.
Thanks. Say bye.